military veterans.
I'm Jim, a homeless veteran, and earlier this week I called Operation Fortitude to seek housing support. I was put on hold for 26 minutes before being promised a call back. Well, yesterday they did phone me back. Hear how the call went down later on in the show.
No homes for heroes. We crossed the Atlantic.
Democrats on the House Oversight Committee have released emails that they say shows Donald Trump knew about Jeffrey Epstein's criminal activity.
CBS breaking the news. Now to the Met here in the UK in London. Police officers being offered money to go if they can't or they won't or refuse to change. More details on that later in the show. 7 o'clock news is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the White House says leaked emails from Jeffrey Epstein about the US president are a manufactured hoax. US lawmakers have released 23,000 pages of documents. In one of them, the late sex offender claims Donald Trump spent hours with a victim. Here's LBC's Washington correspondent Simon Marks.
Now, you might be wondering where these emails have come from. They were furnished to the House Oversight Committee by the Epstein estate, and it was the Epstein estate, of course, that initially furnished the birthday book to the House Oversight Committee that ultimately caused the downfall of Lord Peter Mandelson as the UK's ambassador to the United States.
Donald Trump has always denied any wrongdoing in relation to Epstein. Sir Keir Starmer says he will investigate number 10 briefings, which led to a leadership row. The Prime Minister has apologised to Wes Streeting for anonymous attacks from Downing Street that he was plotting a coup. Former Labour adviser Baroness Hazarika says it was a risky move.
I don't know which kind of idiot boy around Keir Starmer thought it would be helpful to go out and do this briefing. They have done their boss, Keir Starmer, and they've done the party huge damage at a really, really difficult moment.
The Health Secretary has blamed a toxic culture in Downing Street. North Wales has been chosen as the location for the UK's first small nuclear power station. The government says it will bring up to 3,000 jobs to Anglesey. It will cost the government £2.5 billion. New figures show online grooming crimes have reached a record high. The NSPCC says more than 7,000 offences were recorded across England and Wales in the year to March. The charity is calling for tech companies to bring in tighter controls to manage child exploitation. And some of the biggest names in music are urging the government to do more to target ticket touts. Coldplay and Radiohead are on the list of artists calling for a cap on ticket resale prices. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen at 99.11 after closing up 12 points yesterday. The pound buys $1.31 and a euro 13. LBC weather, showers in southern Scotland and northern England, a mix of sunshine and cloud elsewhere this morning, highs of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Amazon Black Friday week deals up to 40% off. Get the perfect gift for your father-in-law, the Deal Hunter. If only he knew about the deal you got on his gift, he would embrace you, just like he does deals. Oh, I guess we're hugging now. Well, that's a long hug. I'm still going. Oh, it's a Black Friday week hug. It's a deal hug. Up to 40% off this Amazon Black Friday week. Starts Thursday.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after 7, Thursday, November the 13th. A very uncivil war seems to have been broken out at number 10. How is it to be defused? And indeed, what happens next? We'll give you the details of that. What are those bombshell, so-called bombshell emails linking President Trump to the disgraced dead paedophile Jeffrey Epstein? White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt insisting the files prove absolutely nothing.
What President Trump has always said is that he was from Palm Beach and so was Jeffrey Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein was a member at Mar-a-Lago until President Trump kicked him out because Jeffrey Epstein was a pedophile and he was a creep.
In other news...
Leaked screenshots show staff at one of the UK's biggest dental companies mocking patients. Smile White says it's completely contrary to their company culture. I'm Phoebe Abbott-Zazy with the exclusive for LBC.
Plus, homes for heroes? Hardly. The latest development on that LBC exclusive supposing Operation Fortitude there to help homeless veterans, but it seems to be more hopeless than homeless. Plus...
Foster's. Good call.
We're not here for the beer. Heineken to make Foster's lager weaker. We'll explain more later in this hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
How to make a crisis out of a drama? Well, just hand it to number 10, or the team, it would seem, as the headlines pour in this morning. Desperate PM in office, but not in power. Another one, number 10 in turmoil before the budget. Another one, streeting goes to war with number 10. I could continue with the headlines, but instead let's get the background to that story. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, gives us the story behind those headlines. Natasha, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, so I can tell you today the Prime Minister called Wes Streeting quite late last night to apologise over what has happened in the last 24 hours. They had a brief chat, I'm told, to try and smooth relations over. I'm told they're expected to speak more soon. And it comes after the revelations of savage rogue briefings coming from Downing Street. It feared that the Prime Minister may face a leadership challenge, possibly as early as the budget. Those briefings vowed that he would fight those. And there was one person, of course, that had the finger pointed at them. That was Wes Streeting. It led to 24 hours of utter chaos at the heart of government. You spoke to him yesterday as he pleaded that he was, in fact, a faithful.
I just think this is ridiculous. No, the Prime Minister is not fighting for his job this morning. In fact, the last time I saw the Prime Minister on Monday evening with a small group of Cabinet colleagues was to talk about how we're going to fight the scourge of violence against women and girls. So I think this is daft, to be honest. In fact, I think someone in Downing Street has been watching too much Celebrity Traitors, and this is just about the most appalling attack on a faithful I've seen since Joe Marler was banished in the final, to be honest.
Can you assure me... Read my notes. You need to say, I am not Alan Carr.
You're right. I'll tell you what, I nearly dropped the F-bomb live on air first thing in the morning.
I'm not Alan Carr.
Yeah, this is why I don't wear rectangular glasses. And if you think I'm giving you that clip for social media, you've got another thing coming.
He said there was a toxic culture at the heart of number 10. And fast forward a couple of hours, it was that quote that was brought up at PMQs by Kemi Badenoch. The Prime Minister fully defended Wes Streeting.
What we heard the Health Secretary say this morning was that he wants to cut waiting lists. But we all know that there's only one waiting list that he really wants to cut. But the Prime Minister is not going to do anything about the toxic culture. This is his responsibility. Just last night, his allies accused... not just the Health Secretary, but the Home Secretary and even the Energy Secretary of launching leadership bids. These attacks came from number 10. Nowhere else, his toxic number 10. The person responsible for the culture in number 10 is his Chief of Staff, Morgan McSweeney. Does the Prime Minister have full confidence in him?
Morgan McSweeney, my team and I are absolutely focused on delivering for the country. And let me be clear, of course, Mr. Speaker, I've never authorised attacks on Cabinet members. I appointed them to their post because they're the best people to carry out their jobs.
But after that, number 10 told us they wouldn't really be taking any action to find this mysterious briefer with any sort of investigation, despite, as we say, it being unauthorised by the Prime Minister. Last night, Andrew Marr spoke with Starmer ally Carolyn Harris. She said these briefings definitely did not get the OK from him.
He will be upset, but he certainly wouldn't have been or can be implicated in anything that may or may not have happened over the last 24, 48 hours. It's not his style. Under no circumstances, and neither would he instruct anybody else. He's very eloquent. He's a very strong man. He's got a lot of principle. He's got tremendous values. If he had something to say, he would say it to the person's face. Mm. And he would not expect anyone else to do anything for him or on his behalf.
So, Nick, what happens next? Well, I spent the day talking to MPs, ministers, staff about how they felt about this sorry episode. Many of them concluded they had no idea why number 10 had done this briefing. They described it as unhinged, stupid, baffling, pointing the finger at some of those people in number 10 Downing Street for being part of this boys' club. We've heard that before, that toxic culture making an enemy of Wes Streeting. Well, Team Wes are clearly very angry. They're very upset. Cabinet ministers and some MPs are calling for Morgan McSweeney, the Prime Minister's chief of staff, to be sacked over this. this. They say there is an unresolved culture in Number 10, despite a turnover of staff again and again and again. They say, someone told me last night, the Prime Minister cannot keep shooting himself in the foot, and many MPs want to see action. This was an attempt to shore up the Prime Minister's leadership ahead of the budget. I think many people in Westminster feel that this has totally backfired. The fact that we are having these open conversations now, rather than behind closed doors, previous Prime Ministers have found that once those discussions start, it's very, very difficult to stop them.
LBC's political editor Natasha Clark reporting now. As Natasha said, a lot of focus is on Morgan McSweeney. For those of you, of course, outside of Westminster, if you live a normal life, you won't really know who he is. But he's the Chief of Staff. So let's bring into the conversation Gavin, now Lord Barwell, Conservative peer, and served as Chief of Staff to former Prime Minister Theresa May. Good to have you on, Lord Barwell. When it works, define the relationship between a PM and his or her Chief of Staff. Morning to you.
You are the Prime Minister's closest political advisor and the gatekeeper to them.
What if you agree something's gone wrong? What do you sense has gone wrong here?
I mean, I think it's a catastrophe. I think it's probably the worst error I've seen from a Number 10. It's the first time I've seen Number 10 launch a coup against itself. It is quite remarkable. You've got a budget coming out. You and I both know it's going to be a really difficult budget. What the government is trying to do is demonstrate that it's taking painful decisions to deliver stability. Why would Number 10, just before that, basically acknowledge the Prime Minister's position is insecure? It's insane. And if you take the Prime Minister at his word that he didn't know anything about this, it's nothing to do with him, he doesn't agree with these attacks on West Streeting, he's basically saying his own staff are out of control. That people in the building do things that he hasn't authorised and doesn't agree with. And it's not the first time, you know, this is not the first Cabinet Minister that's been briefed against by people in Number 10.
You're intrigued by it because of your background. I'm interested in it because I'm a journalist. What does it matter to the voters, to Mrs Jones in Clapham? What does it mean to her, Lord Barlow?
Well, I think most people will find it bizarre that what people hoped is we had this period under the previous government of chaos for several years of these kinds of stories. And people hope that you get after the election, you've got a government with a big majority and politics might go back to being boring and not dominating the news every morning. And so I think it speaks to the bizarre way in which this government with such a large majority has unravelled so quickly.
How much can a Chief of Staff freelance, as in do what he or she chooses without the PM's knowledge?
Well, I mean, obviously you can. It's not a very sensible thing to do. Your reputation depends upon people believing that you speak for the Prime Minister. Quite often, Nick, people will come to your desk and say, I want to do this, or I'm thinking about that. What does the Prime Minister think? And you're almost like the Oracle at Delphi. You speak on behalf of the Prime Minister. And if people discover that you are saying things or doing things that the Prime Minister doesn't actually believe, you're no use to them anymore.
Lastly, and you're a very canny political watcher, I can't believe I'm about to ask you this question, Gavin, but 16, 17 months on from the kind of majority that makes your eyes water, how long has he got, the Prime Minister? Well, I can't believe I'm asking this.
I think he's in real trouble. I mean, I think that the best case for him is that May's elections are critical, I think. But clearly, clearly somebody in Number 10, even if he didn't believe it, was worried that something might crystallise sooner after the budget, which is why they launched this completely crazy briefing operation. So he's clearly in a huge amount of political trouble. And in one sense, Nick, even though I'm not of the same party, I have some sympathy. I think the job of being Prime Minister in this modern disrupted world has got a lot harder.
But why? Why is it so much tougher, Gavin?
So I think society, not just here in the UK, I think societies have become much, much more polarised. The media has become more aggressive, more fragmented. It's not just in Britain that you see this political chaos, right? You look around the world, there's lots of countries, democracies that are having the same struggles. But he can't keep making, or the people around him can't keep making, these completely unprompted mistakes that are making his job even more difficult.
I always enjoy speaking with you. Thank you. Lord Barwell, Conservative peer, served as Chief of Staff to Prime Minister Theresa May, 13 after 7. Listening, James Robinson, who's a former senior Labour communications advisor and was media editor at The Guardian and The Observer, now founder of Woburn Partners. That's Woburn Partners, and joining me now. I take you back to the pre-election Labour manifesto, James. They promised, and I quote, to stop the chaos, close quotes. What's gone wrong?
Well, what's gone wrong is that they're on 20% in the polls. And when you're on 20% in the polls and an upstart party in the shape of Reform is beating you every day in the polls. Of course, that's not a real election. It's just polls. Your MPs start to get scared, restless, angry and insecure. And these conversations that have bubbled to the surface in the last few days have been going on for months because all these MPs, a good number of them, know they're certain to lose their jobs and they're worried about the direction of the government. This is merely a manifestation of conversations that have been going on in Westminster for weeks and months. The party is completely split. Some people think a change would help. And again, I can't believe we're having this conversation either. I mean, really, it is ridiculous. But they do. And the other half of the party think change could be for the worse, as you saw when Boris was replaced by Truss. Chaos it really did ensue then. So that this is something that has been in the ether for many, many months, unfortunately.
So you've worked with the Labour Party, you've been a journalist, you now run Woburn Partners. What would your advice be? What should he do now, James?
Spend more time at home would be my main advice, respectfully. I don't think there can be any more travelling to Brazil or other foreign countries, or far less of it, please, because there are, as we all know and you've alluded to this morning, there are some very serious problems at home, and we'll see that in the budget. We may well see a tax rising budget, as we've all been expected to, or we've all been prepared to expect. I think that would be my main advice. Right. You can't outsource politics to a chief of staff. You're the Prime Minister, you're the leader of the Labour Party. Politics are your job, not a chief of staff's job.
Lastly, James, if you'll allow, and tell me if you think I'm wrong, if you'll allow, one of the reasons the Conservatives got the deserved kicking last year was because of the internal fighting and feuding, and voters just up with this, we will not put. Are we almost at the same level now with this government?
Not quite. Because we haven't had a fiscal event where mortgage rates went up massively and cost people real money. People factor in madness in politics, I think, now. I think the real challenge is living standards. Boring, I know, but it's true. That's what affects us all and our listeners today. So I think we're not there. We're not where we were with Truss and the disastrous budget she had. But, you know, let's see what happens in a few weeks because there is turmoil. As I know it's turmoil. Tumultuous times.
I know, sure. We're both winking at each other. A few weeks, my God, it all happens in a few hours, if not minutes. James, thanks for your input. James Robinson was a senior Labour communications advisor, former media editor of The Guardian and The Observer, now founder of Woburn Partners. Okay, if like me, you sense one of the reasons the Conservatives were biffed was because we were sick of all their fighting and a feuding, are we now seeing a repeat with Labour? Is it on that same scale? And not a bad idea from James there. Why doesn't the man stay at home and try and put things right? In other news, later in the show, a shake-up for Shakespeare.
Be or not to be. That is the question. Whether it is nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune.
The legendary Richard Burton there, of course, from Hamlet. Now, a shake-up of how Shakespeare is taught in our schools. We'll give you details and celebrate the works of the great bard later in the show. 7:17, LBC News Headlines, Lottie Morley.
In the last few minutes, new GDP figures show the economy grew by 0.1% in the 3 months to September. The White House says leaked emails from Jeffrey Epstein about the US president are a manufactured hoax. And Sir Keir Starmer says he will investigate number 10 briefings, which led to a leadership row. LBC weather, showers in southern Scotland and northern England, sunshine and cloud elsewhere with highs of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M20 remains closed eastbound between junctions 8 at Leeds Castle and 9 at Ashford. The investigation works are still taking place after the serious accident late last night. In Easton, Duddon Hill Lane is closed in both directions because of an ongoing police investigation, which also means that Dollis Hill Station on the Jubilee Line remains closed. Outside Euston Station on the Euston Road, there are some roadworks taking place and that's causing lengthy delays in both directions. On the Underground, there are problems for Nine Elm Station on the Northern Line. That's had to be closed because of a shortage of staff. And on the train, Southern services are delayed by about 20 minutes between Epsom and Sutton.
This is LBC.
Introducing the redesigned Dell PC with the Intel Core Ultra Processor. It helps you handle a lot. Even when your holiday to-do lists get to be a lot. like organising your holiday shopping and responding to holiday requests and customer questions and customers requesting custom things, plus planning the perfect holiday dinner for vegans, vegetarians, pescatarians and Uncle Mike's carnival diet.
Whoa.
Luckily, the Dell PC helps you handle a lot. And with impressive battery life, you can do it all faster to get it all done. That's the power of a Dell PC with Intel inside. Get yours at dell.co.uk/holiday.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
At Morrison's, our triple award-winning The Best Signature Collection mince pies are made with melt-in-the-mouth brown butter pastry and filled to the top with brandy and spice mincemeat. Morrison's, making more of Christmas. Majority of stores and online. Offers and prices may vary in Morrison's Daily. Available 1st of December.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents, eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
20 minutes after seven, a fighting and a feuding, almost, it would appear, on the scale of the Conservatives. And they've managed this within, what, 16, 17 months? Extraordinary. And we're trying to explain why it matters to you. By the way, if you think this is just, why are journalists getting so excited and cabinet ministers and others getting so anxious about this, do obviously let me know about that. We'll come to your reactions in just a moment. It is, I have to say, a lot of editors, though, agree it's the biggest show in town. I think I shared some of the headlines with you earlier. The Daily Express, desperate PM. In office, but not in power. It wasn't that long ago we were talking about the extraordinary majority that he'd managed to engineer. The Times, PM told to fire top aide as civil war hits Labour. The I paper, number 10 in turmoil before budget. Ministers turn their anger on top aide McSweeney, as in Morgan McSweeney. The Daily Telegraph, streeting goes to war with number 10. Inside the Daily Telegraph, they list the sort of runners and riders as to who might be vying or positioning themselves to take the top job, one of whom, according to the paper, is Ed Miliband. We're going to hear from him later in the hour. There is one other big story, and we're going to bring you more on that in a moment. The Guardian has it on its front page. Quotes, he knew about the girls, close quotes. Epstein's messages pile pressure on Trump to the LBC app, and that is leading the LBC app, or aspects of that story, is Andrew and Virginia Giuffre photo, quotes, is real. Leaked Epstein emails claim. I did put that in quotes, just so you know that, but that is, as it says there, the claim. And let's do one other at random. Here we go. Gosh, they're all about it. Oh, here we go. Here's one. Sky News telling us that, unfortunately, we are just 24 hours away from the latest resident, or as they were once known, junior doctor's strike. Quotes, our pay is still way down. We must strike again, says the doctor's union chief, with Wes Streeting, of course, when he's able to do his day job as health secretary, saying that should not go ahead. Now, I mentioned the front page of some of the newspapers, the latest claims. Let's go to the US now, because I've got a line into someone there. The idea that new emails suggest Donald Trump knew about the conduct of the late dead paedophile Jeffrey Epstein, released yesterday, including one in which Epstein said, and I quote, of course he, brackets Trump, knew about the girls. Let's get the latest. Or here first, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt claiming the exchanges are selectively leaked as part of a smear campaign.
This is truly a manufactured hoax by the Democrat Party. Now they're talking about it all of a sudden because President Trump is in the Oval Office. But when Joe Biden was sitting in there, the Democrats never brought this up because they actually don't care about the victims in these cases.
Well, let's turn to Charles Feldman, who's a U.S. political analyst and hosts the SOS America podcast. And joining me now, Charles, in your view, true or fake? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I'll tell you this much. What the White House press secretary said, that none of this was brought up during the presidency of Joe Biden, false. The Democrats have been, you know, talking about this for quite some time now. And, you know, look, these emails are very interesting. You got some 20,000, that's a lot, 20,000 emails that have now been made public. Most of them now have actually been released by the Republicans to counter what the White House says with the selective numbers that were released earlier by the Democrats. But it certainly raises some very serious questions about whether or not President Trump has been honest when he talks about his relationship, which we know he had, but which he claims he severed several years ago. But it does, you know, paint a picture of Donald Trump perhaps not being very honest about the extent of his relationship with Epstein.
The average American citizen, Charles, fast asleep in New York, about to go to bed in L.A., how engaged are they?
You know, I tell you, right now, I think most Americans are more engaged with the fact that the government has been shut down. It just is now going to actually open, as
yes,
I'm sure
I read
you know.
That. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, because President Trump just signed that. But I think Americans are more concerned with the fact that airline travel has been disrupted by the government shutdown. Food prices have gone up. People who are dependent on government subsidies to buy food, that money has been greatly curtailed. Or even in some cases non-existent. So I think that that's really more of the focus, to be quite honest, that most Americans have. Having said that, the Epstein story, as you know, this is a story that just keeps on going. Never has a dead man generated so many headlines years after he died.
Where do you see the story going next, Charles?
Well, that's a really interesting question. You know, I would be lying if I told you, Nick, that I know. There are always these twists and turns. The next step is there is going to be a vote in the House, I believe, next week, on whether or not to release, believe it or not, even more documents. These would be the results of the FBI investigation into Epstein. That has also not yet been made public. So, you know, if the House and the Congress goes along and releases those documents, this story is going to go on and on and on and on.
These files, lastly, Charles, are these the JFK files of modern times, i.e. they'll always be drip, 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 but we'll never actually have everything released by anyone in the White House at any time?
I think that's actually probably true. I think that no matter how many documents come out, there's always going to be someone who's going to say, oh, yes, we saw those, but what about these documents? And, yeah, the FBI released it, but what about the CIA? And what about, you know what I mean? I think this is going to go on and on.
Thanks for your time, Charles Feldman, U.S. political analyst and host of the SOS America podcast. Let's come back to events here in the UK. 7:27 is the time, and we're talking about, and I appreciate for many of you, the minute you hear politics, you kind of switch off, but just give me a couple of sentences to explain this. It was less than 18 months ago that this government stormed to power because most of us were sick and tired of the fighting and feuding within the completely bust Conservative Party. And we were promised, I remind you, let me read from the manifesto, here we go, to stop the chaos. Direct words. What's gone wrong? What does he do now? Steve's in Wolverhampton. What do you take from this, Steve? Good morning, sir.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. Yeah, I was just thinking along the lines that Keir Starmer possibly is trying to look at an internal coup that he thinks he can win now so that he can't be challenged again if it's a complete disaster in May elections.
Okay. Do you see any merit in what he, or he would say, his team, tried to do the night before last? Has he achieved anything?
Absolutely nothing. Just complete chaos, really. I think they just haven't got a clue what they're doing, where they're going, what they're going to do next. And I think he's just heading for disaster completely. Him and Rachel Reeves together.
Lastly, I held the previous Conservative government, and by the way, I'm more on their side than I am the other side. I held them in utter contempt in the way they fought among themselves. They lost sight of what they're put there to do, what we pay them a considerable amount of money to do. It was more important than their own petty, and internal feuds and fighting. Do you think Labour have already sunk to that level? Not quite that bad? How would you equate that?
Well,
Steve?
I think they've sunk to that level already because, you know, at the end of the day, when the Conservatives were making a complete mess, which they did, they were chasing them, you know, every corner to sort of blame them. And at the same time, they're doing exactly the same there themselves. So I just think they completely messed everything up. And like I say, just a disaster.
Have a good one, Steve. Thanks for getting involved. 729. At least the Conservatives could point to 14 years, and they were exhausted. They were drained. They'd also had, of course, the financial crash. They'd had COVID, as did every other country in the world. I'm not pretending that's unique to the United Kingdom. They'd had an involvement in the Ukraine war. They were absolutely drained. This new team come in, promising they're going to end all this fighting. It's taken them months to descend to the same level, hasn't it? Or am I being unfair? We'll take more of your views on that. Actually, let's do a couple of that are coming in. I've got a minute here. Here we go. Andy in Edinburgh, here's a good point. A Prime Minister's job is harder because the media's insatiable need to ramp up the rhetoric to get more clicks and to get more attention. This political baiting must stop. Paul Fleets in Sheffield says, when Keir Starmer says he's appointed the best people for the job, why does he keep having to reshuffle them? I mean, back to Andy's point. Is it now that the media demands, and obviously I'm part of it, I understand that, the fact that we hold them to such account, is that part of the reason? We'll take more calls on that. Coming up after the news.
It's a grim backdrop to the Chancellor's budget as figures out this morning show the UK economy barely grew at all in the third quarter of this year, with manufacturing suffering particularly badly. I'm Christian May from City AM and I'll be discussing this with Nick shortly.
And back to the politics beat, as it is reported that Ed Miliband could be the successor to Sir Keir Starmer. He'll join us later in the hour. He'll be talking about the country's first small modular reactor becoming a beacon of a nuclear golden age, but how does a modular reactor actually work? We'll find out later in the hour. 7:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrar on LBC. News time, Lottie Morley.
Figures from the Office for National Statistics show the UK economy grew by 0.1% in the 3 months to September. It's lower than economists had predicted, and it's the final figure to be released before the upcoming budget. The White House has played down new emails from Jeffrey Epstein in which he speaks about Donald Trump. One message claims the US president spent hours with one victim and knew about the girls. A spokesperson says it's part of a smear campaign from the Democrats. And Sir Keir Starmer has apologised to the Health Secretary after the Prime Minister's allies accused him of plotting a coup. It's understood the pair spoke briefly yesterday evening, and Sir Keir will now investigate briefings that led to the row. LBC weather, showers in southern Scotland and northern England, a mix of sunshine and cloud elsewhere, highs of 16 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents.
What on earth is going on at number 10 Downing Street? Who's in charge? Who's briefing? Who's counter-briefing? And has Keir Starmer just made himself look a whole lot weaker by what has unfolded?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
With Lloyd's Home Insurance, there's £50,000 to be won. When you cover the glassware, no one's actually allowed to use. Or the garden shed, a.k.a. your fortress of calm. Rated excellent on Trustpilot, you can be confident with your cover when you take out a new home insurance policy and be in for a chance to win £50,000. Get a quote with Lloyd's today. Buy a new home insurance policy direct from us by the 31st of December 2025. Offer T's and C's apply. Policy terms, limits and exclusions apply.
It's easy to forget just how crazy things have been over the past couple of years. Every day we wake up to something new. Tariffs and taxes on anything and everything. It's tempting to put your hands in your ears and go, la 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 la, I can't hear you, until it's all over. But you know what's the best response to crazy times? A plan for your money. And Quilter can help. Because let's face it, there's probably going to be some crazy times ahead too. Money needs a plan. Quilter. Pensions, investments, advice. Find out more at quilter.com.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
7:33. I'm asking, have Labour achieved the unachievable? They've descended to the sort of civil war, uncivil war. At least it took the Tories years to do it. They've done it in months. We'll come back to your reactions on that in a moment. Let's dive into the world of business. Christian May is editor-in-chief at City AM. Christian, we could talk about GDP. We could talk about the markets. We could even talk about EasyJet. But is it true they're watering down the beer? Let's get to the big ones first. Good morning, Christian.
That's why I like your sense of prioritisation. You're absolutely right. As the weekend approaches, well, look, I personally, I very much enjoy a sort of 3% beer. I mean, that's the kind of stage and age I'm at. I quite like my wheat beer. I quite like it flat as well. So, but maybe I'm not representative of all of our listeners. But it is true that Heineken, which brews, among other things, Foster's, has said that they are going to reduce the lager's alcohol strength down to 3.4%, which is my kind of beer. And they're doing that because it will then be eligible for a lower rate of alcohol duty. Now, I know LBC broke the story yesterday that Chancellor is considering whacking up alcohol duty again in the budget. It wouldn't be the first time, and it wouldn't be the only brewer to lower the alcohol strength of their beers in order to be able to flog them a little cheaper, and I think that's welcome. Personally, when I go out for a beer after work in my patch in the City of London, it's not uncommon for a couple of pints to come in at about 15 quid.
Good gracious.
So if anything can be done to take the sting out of that, I'm all in favour of it. But quite a few brewers have taken this move. Carlsberg, Coors Light, Grolsch have all come down to below 3.4% to qualify for the lower rate of tax in the UK.
Yours, City AM's front page is a punchy one. Problems with the markets, Christian?
Well, we were interested yesterday in how the bond markets would react and what the impact of political chaos would be on those sensitive markets and on borrowing costs for the government. There was nervousness is what we detected. There was no great swing, no great reaction. Borrowing costs, gilt yields did rise a little bit off the back of the political chaos that you've just been referring to. But we spoke to a number of market participants, a number of bond traders, fixed income traders in the sector, who all say the same thing, which is that they're nervous now because actually we were beginning to get a grip on borrowing costs in those markets, not least because of the expectation of interest rate cuts down the line. But they really could do without any kind of political drama. A number of traders that we spoke to said, look, nobody would claim that Rachel Reeves is our first choice of Chancellor, but better the devil you know. Starmer and Reeves at least do take seriously their commitment to their fiscal rules. However they achieve that, and we can come on to that, but they are taking seriously that commitment, and they have, you know, reportedly even told their own MPs to stop mucking around because the bond markets could get jittery. Well, they are jittery. People are nervous in those markets, and they echo Downing Street's own assessment, which is that any move to topple the current administration would indeed cause a bit of havoc there.
These jitters won't be helped by the new economic growth figures. Tell the listeners what they are and interpret them for us, Christian.
Yeah, pretty grim figures out from the Office of National Statistics for growth in the third quarter, July to September, coming in at 0.1%, which is basically coming in at nothing. I was just looking back now. Q1 of this year was quite successful. The quarterly growth there was about 0.7%. And that was largely because so many manufacturers and exporters were sort of front-loading all their activity to get ahead of the tariffs coming in. It went down to about 0.3% in Q2. Now it's down again to 0.1% in Q3. Is there a pattern here? I rather suspect there is. We actually know that growth in September, and as far as 1 month can be measured, was negative. Overall, manufacturing dragged down these most recent growth figures, and some people are attributing that to the complete stall in car manufacturing from one of our biggest manufacturers. But if you're starting to pin the blame on individual companies and their individual problems, you really are in some difficulty. So very disappointing growth figures, not the backdrop the Chancellor wants ahead of her budget. All of the reaction from economists and analysts in my inbox this morning says, look, this is all still to do with the impact of higher taxes and lower business confidence from last year's budget. Well, what are we going to get in a budget in 10 days' time? Higher taxes and, I suspect, further blows to business confidence. So I'm afraid it really is quite a depressing state of affairs.
When might the last post be sounded for second-class mail?
Well, we've talked about this, haven't we? Because we know that Royal Mail was going to ditch second-class deliveries on Saturdays across Britain. They've actually delayed that until early next year. They're still stinging and smarting a bit from the fine the regulator imposed on them, £21 million, for missing their first and second-class mail delivery targets, which was the largest fine ever imposed on them. So they are going to go ahead with the reduction in second-class service over the weekends, but they're delaying that. So I still think it's sensible to probably start posting your Christmas cards around about now.
Finally, we're about to talk soon the row concerning the expansion of Heathrow Airport, but before we do that, let's talk about EasyJet. What's happening down at Gatwick?
Well, they're facing a bit of competition. Gatwick itself is pushing ahead. It hopes to push ahead with its own expansion, ahead of which they have welcomed discount operator Jet2 to launch flights from the airport, which is EasyJet's home. EasyJet shares fell on the news of this, whereas Jet2 surged higher. Jet2 is a huge player in the package holiday industry. They are now going to operate a punchy number of flights and routes out of Gatwick. They've got a pretty good presence at other airports, not least Manchester. They are now coming to Gatwick. They're going to compete directly with EasyJet. The first summer of their operations are going to feature flights to about 30 different countries and resorts, Spain, Greece, Turkey, Italy, etc. So some serious competition for EasyJet there. Hopefully, as is often the case when competition takes hold like this, it will be consumers that benefit.
Let's hope so. Christian May, thank you. Your editor-in-chief at City AM. We'll talk around the same time tomorrow, just coming up on 7.40. Let's stay with the airline sector and the question, to move or not to move? The M25. As you're aware, the government is considering two proposals to expand Heathrow, one from the airport itself, another from the Aurora Group, led by hotel tycoon Surinder Arora. You'll hear from Mr. Arora in a moment. Now, the airport's owners want to build a full-length, over 2 mile runway, which would involve diverting the M25. Aurora Group has other ideas, and as I said, Surinder Arora, the founder and chairman of the group, joins me now. Good to have you on, Mr. Arora. There seems to be, from the other side, as it were, suggestion that a number of planes would not be able to use the runway that you and your colleagues are proposing. Are they right? Morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, it's always the same old story with Heathrow Airport, our friends, because they're never open and transparent, and they'll always come up with things and twist them. Earlier this week on Monday, you may or may not be aware, but there was a conference, aviation conference in London, airlines conference, which Heathrow Airport said, again, well, actually, if we build a shorter runway, you won't be able to accommodate all the flights. So we've actually been working with our delivery partners, Bechtel, who worked on more than 190 airports around the world. We've been working with the airlines, or most of the major carriers, including IAG, including Virgin, American, and the others. And the 2,800-meter runway away from the M25 will take 100% of all landing aircrafts. Also, with the three runways in use, it will also take 99.1% of all takeoff flights. Now, if it's your flight that can't, you've got the other two full-length runways. So I think rather than trying to open up something like the digging of the M25. And we all know very well that Heathrow's own track record, when they've been refurbishing the two existing tunnels into Terminal 2 and 3, that they were just simply refurbishing them. They started the work 13 years ago at a budget of 84 million, and yet they are 11 years late, still not finished. And let alone the budget of 84 million, so far they've spent north of 320 million. And now they're telling everyone they'll finish next year. So really it's up to the airlines and the public to decide, and the government, of course, most importantly, to decide, should we really be even risking our busiest junction in Europe?
Mr. Arora, Heathrow would say that while it's not ideal, and just imagine for my listeners the disruption, digging up the M25, digging up the M4. They admit it's not ideal, but it has to be done. You would contest that?
We would contest that, and the only thing I have been saying to the government very openly, we're here to make a difference. This all started that the regulatory system at Heathrow is so broken and out of date. We need to do something about it. We can't just continue being the most expensive airport in the world and not be in the top 20 from service delivery point of view. So, yes, the government had asked anyone to come forward with their bids, with their ideas. We put our best bid forward. Heathrow put their best bid forward. We will deliver whichever scheme the government want to go ahead with. We are going to make a difference on creating that competition and making sure that the passengers and the airlines and our nation, we get value for money.
Well, let's talk value for money. How do your costs compare to the Heathrow scheme?
Well, I have to say with a smile on my face that, again, Heathrow never been transparent, and they'll always come up with different numbers. A year, 18 months ago, Heathrow was suggesting that the total cost of the expansion, the new runway, the terminal, and the works on central area, the terminals 2 and 3, that they were going to spend somewhere 63, 64 billion. They then changed their line, and they've been saying, no, no, we're only going to spend 43 billion versus our 23 billion. And by the way, I think in that same conference on Monday, Thomas, the CEO of Heathrow Airport, publicly said openly on stage, well, actually, any £1 billion plus project can always have 20-30% cost overrun. If we're going to go into a project of that thinking, are we ever going to deliver any project on time, on budget? So if you look at their 20-30% cost overrun, it goes back into the 60s again. And the other thing they've been saying in the last few days, oh, well, actually, just the cost of our runway is 21 billion. So they'll always try to confuse the passengers, the government officials, and the airlines.
All right. And lastly, Mr. We're talking on a morning when we hear growth has slumped to 0.1%. Heathrow is a key tool for any growth. Which scheme is quicker and why, briefly?
Well, of course, I mean, you can again leave it to the experts and the government official to decide. Our scheme not touching the M25, our scheme not taking so much land take just to really fill up our own pockets as an airport owner-operator. So our scheme is quicker, cheaper, affordable and deliverable.
Grateful for your time as ever. Thank you. Surinder Arora, founder and chairman of the Arora Group, one of the companies, well, one of two companies, bidding for the expansion of Heathrow. Thank you, Mr. Arora. Richard, you want to talk about the Prime Minister? I hope you can hold. We're going to do it a little bit later because I have to get to the news. And then coming up later in the show, the latest development in that LBC exclusive. Homeless, our heroes. Hopeless, the government.
I'm Jim, a homeless veteran, and earlier this week I called Operation Fortitude to seek housing support. I was put on hold for 26 minutes before being promised to call back. Well, yesterday they did phone me back. Hear how the call went down later on in the show.
That's the way to treat a vet, isn't it? 7:45 now, LBC News headlines. Lottie Morley.
New figures show the UK economy grew by 0.1% in the 3 months to September. The White House is playing down new emails from Jeffrey Epstein in which he speaks about Donald Trump. And Sir Keir Starmer has apologised to the health secretary after the Prime Minister's allies accused him of plotting a coup. LBC weather, showers in southern Scotland and northern England, a mix of sunshine and cloud elsewhere with highs of 16.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M20 remains closed eastbound between junctions 8 at Leeds Castle and 9 at Ashford. It's following an accident that happened late last night and the investigation works are still taking place. There are lengthy queues on the approach and one lane's had to be closed westbound as well. Also on the M25, there are clockwise queues from junction 12 at the M3 to 13 at Staines, and that's because a lorry's broken down. Also, the problems right near to Dollis Hill Tube Station continue. Duddon Hill Lane is closed in both directions because of this ongoing police investigation. It also means the tube station stays closed. Outside Euston train station on the Euston Road, there are some roadworks and they're causing delays.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the new LBC app.
Christmas is coming. You're either hosting the crowds at home.
They'll be here any minute.
Or driving to guest at the in-laws, streaming movies in the front room or cartoons in the back seat, prepping the party playlist or making your way on maps.
Rerouting again.
So whether you're hosting or guesting, you need the UK's best mobile network and broadband technology. EE does more.
UK's best network. Root metrics data H125. Full fibre is the UK's most reliable broadband technology. Ofcom's broadband terminology research March 2023. Verify at ee.co.uk/claims.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different. Should be fun. Or wobbly. Or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thameslink Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story.
Great to see you back at Specsavers. Okay, could you read out the letters on the wall for me?
Yep.
D-E-A-L-S? Yeah, D-E-A-L-S, deals.
Oh, right. Our Black Friday deals are eye-catching, but the letter chart's over here.
Oh, sorry.
At Specsavers, we've got all sorts of unmissable Black Friday deals, like up to £50 off one pair of designer glasses. Offer ends on 7th of December 2025. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it. And there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
10 minutes before 8 is the time. Let's come to Richard in Chipping Norton. Thank you for holding through the news bulletin there. We're talking about whether Labour have managed to descend to the level of crisis that the Tories took 14 years. What's your take on that? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
Oh dear, Richard, let's just try one. No, in fact, it's gone completely. Richard, can we try and ring poor old Richard back? Because he did hold and now we can't get to him. Richard, sorry about that. Thank you. The other conversation we're having, of course, is about the airports. Now, we're not far away. I was going to say a decision will be made. My goodness, how many times have I said that concerning Heathrow Airport? It would appear now. I'm sure there'll be judicial reviews, but it all seems to hinge whether to move or not to move the M25. I know, extraordinary. Colin's in Southgate. Colin, you're on the radio. What do you want to say? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. First time caller.
Good to have you on, sir. Why have you reached for the phone?
Thank you. Yeah, the carnage of the airport. I mean, Nick, what a failed opportunity not having a new town north of Northampton, somewhere like that. With a new airport and green economies, etc. I mean, we're reaching breaking point in the South East. It's absolute carnage.
I hear what you say, but if you imagine all the infrastructure that's already there, the roads, the rail links, something like you can get the Elizabeth Line, you can get the Heathrow Express, I think it's called, to Heathrow, would you really want to start building that again in Northamptonshire, Colin?
Well, north of Northamptonshire, where there's more room, we're reaching breaking point here. It's taking me at least an hour or an hour and a half for a 15-mile commute from North Kent to parts of South East London. It's ludicrous.
Good gracious.
You won't be able to move.
Good gracious. Because, of course, I'm never on the roads in the morning. I used to be. I know you're part of the country very, very well. I used to live down in North Kent, so I know exactly where you're. An hour and a half to do 15 miles?
Yes, from parts of North Kent up to sort of hear the Green Cat for that way. It's absolutely... People are putting their hair out and so stressed. It's absolutely unbelievable.
Lastly, your idea, and it's an interesting one, so we're not even going to look at Heathrow, we're off to Northamptonshire. Do you think that would ease the pressure? Because how much of the traffic that you're enduring now is down to the airport, would you say, Colin?
Well, it's a percentage, isn't it? It's not. You're not that far from Gatwick, around the M25. You've got all the hypocrisy with the city airport, all the fumes coming over from there, which is swept under the carpet. It's all cloak and daggers, isn't it? You know, it's you need proper problems to sort these solutions out. You know?
I hear you. I don't envy you on the A2. Good luck, safe driving, Colin. Thank you. I hope you get there eventually. That's extraordinary. An hour and a half to do 15 miles. I mean, that is ridiculous. You have to do that every morning. Let's come back to the woes, the plight of Number 10, turmoil at Number 10. Mike in Crawley. I believe the current state of the government and its future has already been decided by Rachel Reeves. After a decisive election win, Reeves threw away in a cavalier fashion their warm welcome by the removal of winter fuel payments allowed by Keir Starmer. Then we had a year of dismal forecasting, primarily by Rachel Reeves, allowed by Keir Starmer. Now we're waiting for an alleged crippling budget, cunningly planned 3 weeks before Christmas, that may well breach manifesto commitments, engineered by Rachel Reeves allowed by Keir Starmer. When the Labour Party takes a drubbing, it's because Rachel Reeves is the de facto Prime Minister who has driven the party from the outset. Glynn says, this all lies with never hear Keir's absences. I thought at the time of Rachel Reeves here, she is again, weird broadcast the other day, she may have gone rogue or somewhere allowed to. I think Morgan McSweeney is behind all of this and is trying to do the role of the Earl of Warwick Kingmaker from the War of the Roses. I think we've got Richard in Chipping Morton on a better line. Richard, let's try again. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
Oh, 1,000% better. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, I'm just about to say that in Mrs. Thatcher won in 1979 by landslide,
yep,
similar to Keir Starmer.
Yep.
But by November 1980...
She was, yep.
She was really, really, really unpopular.
Well, that was the Ladies Not for Turning speech, wasn't it, of course?
Yeah, so...
Harold Wilson. Harold Wilson, 1 year in, quotes, I know what's going on, I'm going on. So you're not wrong. It's just, Richard, do you think politics, the world, moves at a faster pace than in the days of Harold Wilson and Margaret Thatcher?
Yeah, but people still expect, after 14 years of Tory chaos, they expect Labour to come in and change things overnight.
Mm.
Politics doesn't work overnight. You can't change the course of an economy in 18 months.
You're absolutely right. Do you sense, and this is an intriguing conversation, do you sense that some of the groundwork is being laid? And it's a lot, if not all, of this criticism, in your view, then, is wholly unfair?
Yeah, I think it's being laid. And, yeah, the criticism isn't 100% fair. I mean, a lot of people seem to be talking behind Keir Starmer's back, which doesn't help at all, and especially with reform, giving them a lot of heat. So I think we should give Labour more time. I'm sure they're going to do really badly in the council elections.
I think you're right, sir, yeah.
But again, in the council elections in 1981, or in 1980, the Tories did really, really badly.
You're right,
and
again.
Yep. A lot of the commentators were saying that Maggie probably wouldn't survive until the next election in 1983.
No, you're absolutely right.
But then the Falklands War came along and rescued her.
Yeah, well, we don't want another war. Lastly, you think some of the foundations are being laid. For my listeners, sitting in their cars, sitting in their homes, in their offices, well, what's this man saying? Where are the foundations? What would you say?
I know they're not easy to see now, but, I mean, we've had growth in every quarter, although it hasn't been great, and it's only 0.1, but it's there, and we're actually doing better than some countries in Europe.
Mm, okay.
Just give more time to Keir.
Give more time to Keir is what you're saying. Okay, thank you very much for that. I have to go. Richard, thank you for coming to us on A Better Line. I must go because you're talking about the foundations that are being laid, you would say, by the government. One might be, of course, the idea of Britain's first small modular reactor, nuclear reactor, to be built in North Wales. Here with more details is Secretary of State for Energy Security and Net Zero, Ed Miliband, joining me now. Good to have you on board. Thank you very much indeed, Secretary of State.
Good to be with you, and I'm sorry for being late, Nick. I don't like being late for you. I'm sorry.
You're a very busy man with a lot of pressures on. I completely understand it, and thank you for your apology. There's no need to apologise. It's my pleasure to have you on. Mr. Miliband, how does a nuclear reactor work?
A nuclear reactor produces nuclear power through a fission process, and that then produces power and electricity. Let me just talk about the small modular reactors.
Yes, what's the distinction with that one? That was my next question,
what's so exciting? What's so exciting about this, Nick, is that this is the new technology built at smaller scale, so off-site. Most of the building takes place off-site, unlike a conventional large-scale nuclear power station, and it is replicable, so you produce lots of them. Now, why are those two things important? It's a way to bring down costs, make sure that you come in on budget. And when you look around the world, that is what is happening around the world, countries moving towards small nuclear reactors, and we've decided to put these in North Wales. The last station closed 10 years ago here. It's 3,000 good jobs, clean power for 3 million homes, and it's a British company leading the way in Europe, leading the way internationally in what is going to be a huge market.
Why have you chosen this particular site?
It's the best site, basically.
But why is it the best site, Mr. Miliband?
Well, it's the best site we have because it can accommodate up to 8 of these little babies, these SMRs. And that's really, really exciting. And so I got advice about two different sites, Wilver or Oldbury, and this was seen as the best site, which is why we've chosen it.
All right. That's twice you've said the word exciting. Do you think you get out enough, Mr. Miliband, if you find this exciting?
I don't think I'm on your programme enough. That's what I say to my team.
I read, though, unfortunately, the choice of Rolls-Royce has upset the United States, says a headline in The Guardian. Why so, and your response? Mr. Miliband.
Well, the US, as is their job, but the US ambassador wanted a US company to be based on this excellent prime site. We chose a British company. It's totally legitimate for the US to say they wanted a US company there. We decided that this site should be for our own sovereign capability, for Rolls-Royce, for our flagship program. And you'll understand why we made that decision, because we act in the British national interest. And we work closely with our American colleagues on a lot of nuclear issues. Actually, the other site at Oldbury might now work for some US companies. So it'll all be fine. But, you know, he's advocating for his country, totally understandably.
You've talked about costs. When's my energy bill going to come down by the money you promised me?
Well, we said up to £300 by 2030, if you remember, Nick, yes. From Clean Power.
Yes.
And we're in 2025.
It's going the other way at the moment, Mr. Miliband. Every time I get it through the post, I think of you.
That's nice of you. Look, we are very focused on getting bills down. For 3 million families this winter, we're going to be taking £150 more off their bills as a result of our Warm Homes discount. We're very focused. The reason we made that pledge was because of the affordability crisis that we know many families are going through. We're very, very focused on this. I know the Chancellor is focused on this, cost of living, affordability, and obviously can't speak about what might be in the budget, but you know, we are very focused on this. But it takes time to put up the solar power, the wind power, all of that. It's the way to get off fossil fuels and get bills down.
All right. We're talking about these small modular nuclear reactors. That's page 2 of the newspaper. Page 1 has other political stories of which you will be aware. Is there any set of circumstances by which you would want to be Prime Minister, Mr. Miliband?
Nope.
Why? You had a go a few years ago.
Exactly. I had the best inoculation technique you could have against wanting to be leader of the Labour Party, which was being leader of the Labour Party. Been there, done that, bought the T-shirt. No. Look, I support Keir, and we've all got a job to get this government to succeed. Leadership is a collective business, Nick. That's what I'm focused on.
Yes, you support Keir, but there are extraordinary, it would appear, moves afoot. Is he in office but not in power, Mr. Miliband?
No, I don't think so. Look, I'm old enough and ugly enough to remember
that. I will not allow that. You're quite young.
We are, oh, thanks, yeah. I get
well done.
Saying. the penny dropped. Look, I was there during the Blair Brown years, as were you, Nick.
Yep.
You know, that wasn't exactly a sort of, you know, the land of milk and honey in terms of, you know, relationships. These things happen. But you go through this turbulence as a government. What sustains you? Here's the most important thing I want to say to all of my colleagues in the Labour Party. What sustains you is keeping focused on your mission for the country. The country, not the party. Your values, why you're there, who you're standing up for, what we're talking about today, which is about how we change our economy so it properly works for people again. That's where your focus needs to be. That's what gets you through the turbulence.
Look, I've known you for yonks, and I know you're genuinely committed to that. But the night before last, the briefing went out. This is the gang that can't shoot straight working for Sir Keir, isn't it?
Look, the briefing's bad, and the culture of briefing is bad, and it's, you know, I've seen it in politics for 30 years, so have you, these anonymous sources, you know, you never know who it is, you never really find out, you can have an inquiry, it's good to try and find out. I know Keir will get rid of the person if he can identify them, but you never quite find out.
What if that person is Morgan McSweeney? Does Mr. McSweeney need to go, Mr. Miliband?
Well, look, Keir has said he's had full confidence in Morgan, and that's good enough for me. I don't going to get into those stuff.
But what if he is behind the briefing, Mr. Miliband?
Morgan can help us win the election.
If it is Mr. McSweeney, to use your words, he must go, right?
Well, to be fair, look, I'm not going to start casting aspersions around about who might have done the briefing. I've got no evidence. I've seen no evidence of that. Look, in a sense, these things come and go. I do think this is the fundamental point. The fundamental point is we won this historic opportunity to change the country last year. That's where our focus needs to be. We've got also equally a historic responsibility to deliver on that promise, to deliver on the change, to make this country work for working people again. And that's where my focus is, and that's where all of the focus of my colleagues needs to be.
Last minute, and you may not be aware of this because you're busy in Wales, as we say, with these modular nuclear reactors, but the latest growth figures are in, and they're very depressing. It's 0.1%. Your government was elected to bring about growth. We're going backwards, Mr. Miliband, no?
Well, they're disappointing figures. And look, there are some global headwinds. There were some specific factors around JLR and the cyber attack, which have affected these figures. But I'm making no bones about it. It's disappointing. We're focused on growth because we want to raise living standards. And, and I know the Chancellor will be redoubling her efforts. We all redouble our efforts. What we're announcing today is important. The one little fact for you, Nick, the net zero economy, some people don't like net zero, I know, grew three times faster than the economy as a whole last year. This is the growth opportunity of the 21st century. China's seizing it. India's seizing it. We need to seize it. That's what we're about.
Grateful for your time this morning. Thank you. Ed Miliband, Secretary of State for Energy Security and Net Zero, talking about this new development with the small modular nuclear reactor to be built in North Wales. 4 after 8, LBC News headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, new emails have been released showing more detail about Donald Trump's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. The late sex offender appears to say the US president spent hours with a victim at his home. White House Press Secretary Caroline Levitt has called it a manufactured hoax.
What President Trump has always said is that he was from Palm Beach and so was Jeffrey Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein was a member at Mar-a-Lago until President Trump kicked him out because Jeffrey Epstein was a pedophile and he was a creep.
Donald Trump denies any wrongdoing in relation to Epstein. Ed Miliband has told LBC he would not consider a return to leading the Labour Party. It's after the Prime Minister announced he will investigate anonymous attacks suggesting his colleagues might be plotting a leadership coup. The Energy Secretary told Nick he's not interested in Sir Keir Starmer's role.
I had the best inoculation technique you could have against wanting to be leader of the Labour Party, which was being leader of the Labour Party. Been there, done that, bought the T-shirt. No. Look, I support Keir, and we've all got a job to get this government to succeed. Leadership is a collective business, Nick. That's what I'm focused on.
UK economic growth slowed to 0.1% over the past 3 months, lower than expected. The Office for National Statistics says it's partly down to a fall in car production after a major cyber attack on Jaguar Land Rover. City AM editor Christian May told Nick it's not a good outcome for the Chancellor.
Very disappointing growth figures, not the backdrop the Chancellor wants ahead of her budget. All of the reaction from economists and analysts in my inbox this morning says, look, this is all still to do with the impact of higher taxes and lower business confidence from last year's budget. Well, what are we going to get in a budget in 10 days' time? Higher taxes and, I suspect, further blows to business confidence. So I'm afraid it really is quite a depressing state of affairs.
Working from home could help more disabled people re-enter the workforce. A House of Lords committee is urging the government to use it as part of a wider scheme to tackle rising inactivity. And the opening match at the 2028 European Championship will be held in Cardiff. Britain and Ireland are preparing to co-host the next Euros tournament. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen at 99.11 after closing up 12 points yesterday. The pound buys $1.31 and a euro 13. LBC weather, showers in southern Scotland and northern England, a mix of sunshine and cloud elsewhere, and highs of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to do. Dominate your finances.
Sunday morning, listening to questionable financial advice from the FinTok Bros on his social feed.
Drowning in green. Scale, 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 scale.
This is the moment Isaac chose to search Barclays Life Skills, get some better money intel, and save up for that new skateboard. We're helping young people become money confident. Search Barclays Life Skills. Barclays. Make money work for you.
This is LBC. From Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call and WhatsApp message now. 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Warned you 8 minutes after eight on Thursday, November the 13th. There are plenty of other stories coming up, but let's get straight into this one. And I make no apologies taking you back 24 hours, or actually even further than that. Because right at the start of this week, you may recall the government minister telling us that there was this new Operation Fortitude that would ensure that any homeless veteran, if it was you, if it's someone you so know, someone you love, your mum, your dad, if they were homeless, ring this number and they would get a bed that night. That's what the government told us. If you were listening yesterday, you know we put it to the test and the homeless was a hopeless fail. There's an update. My colleague LBC's Andy Ballantyne joins me with the latest and the exclusive details. Andy, morning again.
Good morning, Nick. Are you ready for round three? Well, on Monday, we had this from Minister for Veterans and People, Louise Sander-Jones.
This is something I really want to get across, Nick, and I wonder if you could help me with this. It's Op Fortitude, which is our helpline for any veteran that is facing sleeping on the streets tonight, or if you know a veteran that's sleeping on the streets tonight, call this number and the government will make sure that we find accommodation for them. And the number is, Nick, and this is a challenge for everybody to remember this number, 0800 952 0774. If you're a veteran facing sleeping on the streets tonight, call that number and we will find accommodation for you.
On Tuesday, it was Health Secretary Wes Streeting on the morning rounds.
What you've just described, Nick, is completely unacceptable.
And I appreciate you'd have no knowledge, so I'm grateful for your comment.
No, but in all seriousness, if your team pass me the details, I will make sure that this is picked up by the Ministry of Defence today.
Mr. Streeting was responding to Jim, a homeless veteran, left on hold for 26 minutes before the line went dead. The 37-year-old who served in the Royal Engineers, including a tour of Afghanistan between 2009 to 2015. 18 hours later, someone from Op Fortitude did call Jim back.
Just for you, not family unit or anything like that.
I've got a partner and a dog.
Right, we can't support your partner. You can only support yourself. Your dog can come along to some support accommodation, but we'll help you. I'm sorry, that's the situation we're in.
Okay.
I can't change that.
So there's no support, so there's no point in filling the form then?
Well, no, not if it's for you and your partner, no.
Right.
After what had been a courteous exchange during the length of the call, the person on the other end of the line simply hung up on Jim. Excuse after excuse after excuse and pure frustration for Jim, who gave us this feedback on how support for homeless veterans is working for him.
Frustrating and disheartening, especially when you look at things like how much money they get and the wage bill and paying someone a lot of money to deliver these services that aren't necessarily what they could go towards. Lip service, gatekeeping, waste of money.
In response, a Ministry of Defence spokesperson told LBC that they have looked into the issues raised as a matter of urgency. Every veteran deserves appropriate support and we take any concerns very seriously and will always look to improve the service. The government is committed to renewing the contract with those who served and have served. Op Fortitude never offer tents as a solution to homelessness. But in just 3 days, LBC has exposed the failings of veterans in distress and in need of a home. Nick, for Jim, this experience is the norm. Form filling for nothing time and time again when all he wants is somewhere to call home.
LBC's Andy Ballantyne reporting. Just to reference the tents line, if you were listening this time yesterday, you'll recall that another veteran, she contacted Operation Fortitude or Op Fortitude, and she wasn't given a home for the night, a bed for the night. She was sent a tent. That's right, she was sent a tent. Now, Jim, who is sort of at the front of this story, served 6 years in the military. He went to war for Queen and Country, as it was then, in Afghanistan. And that's how we treat him? Let's bring in to the conversation Sir Ian Duncan-Smith. Now, Sir Ian is uniquely positioned with this. Not only is he a leading Conservative MP, former leader of the party, indeed, he is a vet himself, having been a captain in the Scots Guards. Good to have you on, as ever, Sir Ian. Well, you've heard the story. Your reaction to the government promise and reality bites. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, it's a complete shambles, and I don't understand, too, by the way. I've not recently come back from Ukraine, where they're dealing with a brutal war and veterans suffering from PTSD, and they're doing their best to help them out. And then you come here to the UK and the MOD can't even organise a helpline, for goodness sake, that actually means something rather than being cosmetic in an attempt to say to you on your radio programme or anybody else, don't worry, we've got this in hand, we have a helpline. Well, the helpline isn't any use if there isn't anything behind it to back it up. And I thought when I read your piece about the idea of sending a veteran a tent, I mean, my jaw just dropped. And I thought to myself, does the MOD ever change? Do they ever get it? I mean, during the Second World War, it's interesting to note that when people were taken prisoner, they cut their salary by half without even asking them whether they had families who then lived in poverty until the end of the war. I mean, can you believe it? This is what goes on, I'm afraid.
Take your politician's hat off, you would, sir. Put your army hat on, your military hat. How do military blokes and women react to these sort of stories, Sir Ian?
Well, it's been going on. I mean, it's bewildering for them because, of course, they've put their lives on the line. They've done their bit for their country. And then they come back, and Kipling got it right. Do you mind if I just give you one line of a Kipling poem?
Go ahead, sir.
It's Tommy this and Tommy that and chuck him out the brute, but it's saviour of his country when the guns begin to shoot. It's Tommy this and Tommy that and anything you please. And Tommy ain't a blooming fool, you bet that Tommy sees.
Sir Ian Duncan Smith, thank you for your time. Conservative MP for Chingford and Woodford Green, former Work and Pension Secretary, you were leader of the party, and in reference to this, you served as a captain in the Scots Guards. So what, thanks Sir Ian, 14 after 8. What is this idea, and I'm paraphrasing what Jim was told, we can support you, we can't support your partner, but we can support you and your dog. Now, if you've been brave enough to go to war, or to serve in the military, you're far braver than I, by the way, if you're brave enough to have done that, you then go to Afghanistan, you can only imagine what Jim might have seen or been called to do. His partner is of huge emotional support, these poor men and women, their husbands, their wives, whatever it might be, lovers, partners, it doesn't matter. Let's talk a little bit about that with Professor Sir Simon Wesley. Now, Sir Simon is Professor of Psychological Medicine at the Institute of Psychiatry, Psychology and Neuroscience at King's College London and co-director of the King's Centre for Military Health Research. OK, sir, let's talk about a military vet. He, she comes back from the front line, whatever they've done. How important is the support provided by their partner, husband or wife? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, you don't need me to tell you that it's absolutely critical, Nick. Actually, just listening to Ian Duncan Smith then... one ironic thing, I don't know if you know this, but Op Fortitude is a very famous name in the military, and it's the name of the massive deception operation that was run by the Allies to persuade the Germans that we weren't going to land in Normandy.
Is this the movie The Man Who Never Was?
No, not The Man... Well, yes. Sorry, yes. It was part of that. That was just a small thing.
Wow.
It was a huge thing. I think they've forgotten what it actually referred to be absolutely honest from what you've just heard. Anyway, yes, it is absolutely crucial. It's all crucial for all of us, our social networks, but at the time when you leave, it's more crucial for the military than probably any other profession. I mean, you and I, Nick, I know I qualified in 1981. You started journalism in the same year. Mm-hmm. And both of us have done the same thing ever since and will probably do so until we're carried off. Mm-hmm. But the military are very different. They know that at some stage, unless they die in service, they are going to completely change career. And at the same time, change their housing, their way of life, their institution, all of these things. And we've shown that if you don't keep your social networks during that transition, you have a much higher risk of mental health problems, PTSD and depression. And the best thing you can do is change your social networks to new ones. The medium thing is to keep the old ones going, but the worst is to lose them. And that's just beyond, you don't need to do any more research on that. That's a fact.
So, Simon, you've done a lot of work on PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. Mm. What are the best ways to help people, to combat it, to treat it?
Well, the first thing is most soldiers are actually pretty resilient people, and certainly at lower levels of distress, not full PTSD, but they have their own good ways of coping through their social networks. That's what most of them do most of the time. They'll talk to themselves, to their colleagues, their families, whatever. I'm sorry about my
alarm busy man. Going off. Go ahead.
Yes, don't worry. I can't do anything about it. that's what they'll do. And they also often believe that, you know, that they can manage it themselves. And often that's true. But when it doesn't, then there are a whole variety of services that they can, that they can contact. And there's about 2,000 military charities out there. Not all of them deal with mental health, of course, but some do. Combat Stress, that I'm part of, does. RBL does, Help for Heroes do. So there is a lot of help out there. It's not a totally barren territory. And also in recent years, it has improved. I mean, I realize that this has been a bit of a screw up, what you're describing, but in fairness to the Office of Veterans Affairs, who do this, I think it's only been running for a year or two, and already I think 1,000 veterans have got housing through this helpline, but plenty of others clearly haven't.
I must leave it there. We're over time. Thank you very much for your input. Please don't worry about the phone. You're a busy man. Professor Sir Simon Wesley is Professor of Psychological Medicine at the Institute of Psychology and Neuroscience at King's College London and co-director of the King's Centre for Military Health Research. A little bit late to the headlines. Coming to them in a moment. We can support you. We can support your dog. But we can't support your partner. The homeless scheme, more hopeless than homeless, surely. 8:18, LBC News headlines, Lottie Morley.
New emails have been released showing more detail about Donald Trump's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. Ed Miliband has told Nick he would not consider a return to leading the Labour Party. And UK economic growth slowed to 0.1% over the past 3 months. LBC weather, showers in southern Scotland and northern England, sunshine and cloud elsewhere, and highs of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. In Kent, the M20 remains closed eastbound between junctions 8 at Leeds Castle and 9 at Ashford. It's following an accident. There are severe delays back to junction 7 at Detling Hill. Surrounding routes are extremely busy, especially the A20. Also on the motorways, the M25 is very busy anti-clockwise at junction 27 at the M11. Just after the junction, a car's broken down, so one lane is closed. Also, these problems do continue right near to Dollis Hill Tube Station. Duddon Hill Lane is closed both ways, and the underground station remains closed as well. Also on the underground, there are severe delays now on the Piccadilly line between Cot Fosters and Arnos Grove, and minor delays on the central line.
This is LBC.
In her framing shop, Sally's got an eye for precision, plus a computer full of customer orders and precious memories. There are locks on the doors and sensors on the windows. But what's securing it all is BT Cybersecurity, with business antivirus, cloud protection, and security awareness training. It helps stop threats before they strike, keeping sensitive business data safe. Because protecting your business takes more than just toughened glass and a steady hand. Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Search BT Business Cybersecurity.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like. From real Octopus Energy calls.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
The customer service was really good.
The people are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had 2 kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
8:22, coming to your calls. Guy, Steve, coming to you in just a moment. I'm grateful to Sir Simon pointing out, I probably should have known myself, Operation Fortitude. Just taking this off, it was a complex Allied deception plan during World War II designed to mislead German forces about the location and timing of the D-Day landings. As Sir Simon told us, it was divided into two main parts, Fortitude North, which suggested an invasion of Norway, Fortitude South, which created a convincing illusion of a large army poised to attack the Pas-de-Calais region. It was achieved through a variety of methods, including dummy armies, fake radio traffic, and double agents feeding false information to the Nazis, ultimately convincing Hitler to keep significant forces away from Normandy. So we go back to 19, whatever that would have been, 42, 43, we move on, however many years it is, 80-odd years. And Operation Fortitude Now is also a fake. It is a hopeless veteran plan, and it is an insult to men and women far braver than I who are prepared to go to war. Steve's in Watford. Are you ex-military, sir? Good morning.
Yes, Nick, I sent you a search. I did 9 years.
Where were you?
I was very lucky. Yeah. Sorry, Nick.
What regiment were you in?
I was in the Royal Signals.
Oh, my dad was in that. There you go. Fantastic. Where did you serve?
I did 6 tours in the provinces.
Ooh, okay. When you hear the story about how Jim is being treated, as a bloke who's brave enough to go to war, how do you react?
I cannot say the language I wish to say on the radio, Nick, because I don't want to get you in trouble with Ofcom.
Thank you for that.
My blood is boiling.
Is it really?
Because I was lucky, as I said to your researcher, when I came out, I had family and friends behind me. My mother, my father, my brother, sister, and a lot of good mates who were there to help me come to terms with what I witnessed in my time.
Yep.
And I'm lucky, because obviously people who served in Afghanistan, Iraq, and all the other places that we send soldiers to probably saw more horrors than I would have seen.
Yeah.
And I think that this government and previous administrations, I'll say that, Nick, not just Labour,
no, I agree.
Previous administrations have treated veterans disgustingly. And again, I reiterate to your researcher, how is it we can find nearly £6 million a day to house illegal immigrants and we can't find the money to put these veterans somewhere safe and warm? It's a disgrace.
I cannot answer that question. All I can say is I fear the veterans don't have a loud enough voice, whereas there is an army, I choose that word deliberately, an army of liberals and lawyers and everyone else, quite rightly making the case that a lot of these people are fleeing war and persecution and rape and torture, whatever it might be, and we must look after the genuine ones. They have a very loud voice with that army behind them. Our real army, I'm afraid, don't shout loud enough. Steve?
Well, we've got Johnny Mercer, of course, who's former military.
Yeah.
And I didn't catch the name of the gentleman you had previously, who was also ex-military.
So that's Sir Ian Duncan Smith. He was the former leader of the Conservative Party.
That's it, Nick. I'm sorry for my ignorance.
No, don't be serious. It's my job. Don't be ridiculous. Yep.
You know, it's about time that veterans actually got together and formed a voice. And I'll tell you what, Nick. I think that the vast majority of British people must be disgusted with this and previous administrations, the way our veterans have been treated. It's a disgrace. It's disgusting. And I'm getting more and more angry as the time goes by. I want to hear this.
I can hear it in your voice. I'll let you move. Thank you for your service. Really significant that you're in the Royal Signal, so that's where Dad was. And thank you for your call as well, Steve. Thanks. Guy in Cleethorpes, you're on the radio. Your reaction to this story. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning, Nick. I've had to sort of park up because I'm absolutely incensed by it.
Yep.
We've got, I mean, we talk about immigrants and housing and all the rest of it, but we've got immigrants that we can't deport because our courts say they have a right to a family life.
Yep.
So if your lad doesn't like chicken nuggets, you can't.
That's a good point, of course.
So where's the human rights for our veterans to have full support for a family life? Why can't they support his partner? We've got people bringing. There was one case of an immigrant that brought 7 of his family members over under the guise of he has a right to a family life.
Yep.
Why does that not apply to our veterans?
Because they don't care, and broadly, mostly they're decent blokes and women, and they don't make a fuss, Guy. That they just get on and they get a tent or they get a van and they sleep in it. That's the reality, Guy.
I'm absolutely incensed, Nick. Absolutely incensed.
Not alone. Thank you for that. Let's go to... Thanks, Guy. Have a good one. Thanks for pulling over. I just want to make sure I can read your names. Rob, I'm an Afghan veteran. What a joke Op Fortitude and this government are. I bet if a migrant gets off a boat with their partner, they don't offer us to house him and his dog. Yasmin, similar point. Why is it they find space for asylum seekers but not our veterans? If you gave an asylum seeker a tent, the lawyers would say it's inhumane. Why don't the lawyers get legal help too? Why don't the lawyers get legal? Obviously, maybe there's not enough money for them. I think maybe why don't the veterans get legal? Well, we're not going to let go of this story, Yasmin, I assure you. Thank you. Steve's in Chesterfield. Steve, your reaction to what you're hearing. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
Angry. How are you?
As am I. I have no idea to save a fortune for the whole country.
Go on.
Give these boat people a tent
yep.
and a veteran a room in a hotel.
Totally with you.
Yeah?
Yep.
That's all I've got to say.
Never going to happen, Steve. I'm absolutely on the same page. It's not going to happen because the lawyers would scream from the rooftops and everybody would come a-running. Steve, thanks for your input on that. Allows me just to a minute or so before we give you a full news update. By the way, I'll tell you now, we're already thinking about how we move this story on. We are not going to let this go. And just a note to anyone who's listening from the Conservatives or Reform or Lib Dems or whatever it might be, few things get under the skin of British people like the mistreatment of our veterans. I know, I've been around forever, right? I've been news stories more years than I can count, almost. It angers people. These men and women are incredibly brave. They do things that I can't even imagine. They will have seen sights I couldn't even bear. I doubt I'd ever sleep properly again. And they do it for us. They serve for king now, queen then. Unquestionably. Given an order, okay. You want something done, ask a soldier. I also mean a sailor and an airman as well, an airwoman and everything. And they come back, and they've got issues. Remember the woman we told you about? She served in Kosovo, and she's given a tent. Jim served in Afghanistan. We'll find a room for you, and we'll find a room for your dog, but not your partner? Chris in Manchester. Chris, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Hi, how you doing? You okay?
I'm angry, my friend. I'm angry. It's unfair. This is not right. Plain and simple.
Yeah, exactly the same feelings.
Yeah.
The only point I'd like to make, because I'll be quick on this one.
Okay, sir.
The last government, a parliamentary committee, Home Office were being grilled at a parliamentary committee, and it came out that there was 5,000 empty beds being used in case Manston was overrun by immigrants.
Oh, God.
That could have been used by veterans, and I'd love to know if that is still the case. I'd love to put that question to somebody. Have we still got a massive buffer zone of beds that we're not even using?
Right, that will be part of tomorrow's report. We'll find out. Chris, thank you. I either wasn't aware or I'd forgotten. I'm just waving at a colleague so that we make sure we feature that as part of the story tomorrow. Thumbs up, so we will. Chris, safe driving. I know you're in a vehicle. All right, we will continue this story, I promise you, also after the news and through the course of this week. But also later in the show, time to shake up Shakespeare.
O loving hate, O anything of nothing first create, heavy lightness, serious vanity, misshapen chaos of well-seeming forms.
Leonardo DiCaprio there playing the piano as he was Romeo in Romeo and Juliet. I'll take you back to your school days, even if you hated it. Shakespeare's works were pretty impressive, weren't they? And they want to shake up how it's taught in our schools, and I'll tell you more in the next hour. We're at 8:30. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, and LBC News with Lottie Morley.
The White House says leaked emails from Jeffrey Epstein about the US president are a manufactured hoax. US lawmakers released 23,000 pages of documents last night. Energy Secretary Ed Miliband has told Nick he's not interested in Sir Keir Starmer's role. It's after the Prime Minister announced he will investigate anonymous attacks suggesting his colleagues might be plotting a leadership coup. And official figures show the economy grew between July and September, but not by as much as experts hoped. The Office for National Statistics says it went up by 0.1% in the third quarter. LBC weather, showers in southern Scotland and northern England, sunshine and cloud elsewhere, with highs of 16 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
The high street pub that we had in my town's gone. The small joys, the fish and chips on a Friday, going to the cinema. We looked at taking the kids to the cinema on Sunday. Forget it. It's like 60 quid, so we're not going to bother with that. All of those sort of small joys, the reasons why you do it, Lib Dems say are becoming an unaffordable luxury for too many. And they're right. And that says something about the state of the country.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
At Harwoods, we know your car says a lot about you. Maybe that you like to make an entrance, or you'd rather make your escape. That you want to cut a dash, or just cut your emissions. That you like to take the bends, or bring your four-legged friends. Whatever, we speak your language. Come and have a chat at Harwoods Audi Crawley and Five Oaks and Harwoods Volvo Crawley. Details at harwoods.co.uk. Harwoods. Family-owned since 1931.
Switching to Vodafone full fibre broadband is now as easy as pie. Ooh, freshly baked. It's a walk in the park. Hello, little fella. It's like taking candy from a baby. Come on, as if I'd do that. With One Touch Switch, it's easy. We sort everything out for you. We even contact your current provider. Plus, we'll help towards leaving fees.
Switch today to full fibre broadband with Vodafone.
Up to £200 credit to cover leaving fees. More information and terms at vodafone.co.uk/broadband.
So, look, saying thanks isn't my strong point, Dad. But it doesn't mean I don't want to say it. Like telling you thanks for being, well, my dad. Saying thanks for keeping my chair at the dinner table. I only moved out 8 years ago. For teaching me how to load a dishwasher correctly. Didn't know there was a right way. And for all the advice I never listened to. But you know what I'm like. I never get round to saying it.
This Christmas, if you can't find the words, find the gift. John Lewis.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8:33. Coming up later in the hour, as it's reported that the GDP is weaker than expected. What does that mean for you? How do we fare among other European countries? How do we fare among the rest of the world? If GDP is going down here in the UK and in Europe, where is it going up? And where it is going up, why? A full explanation to come, because you'll hear this GDP figure quoted at you, quite rightly, by the way, in the news bulletin. I'm not for a moment saying you shouldn't. But it's my job to try and explain to you why it is so important. And we will do it, as I say, later in the show. Coming back to our conversation about the veterans in a moment. Have I told you the time? It's 8:34, if I haven't. Now, imagine you're in a job, and you get a tap on the shoulder, or an email, or a phone call, or whatever, and you're effectively told, we don't think you're able to change, we don't think you're willing to change, so get out. Pardon? We've just decided you're not willing, you're not able to change, so there's some money, get out. Who would be treated like that? Well, that would be the Metropolitan Police Force. Yes, you did hear that correctly. They are to widen their efforts to purge the force of officers deemed unsuitable for service by this payoff scheme. Sir Mark Rowley, the Commissioner, revealed the move in a letter this week to all officers between, I think actually that was last week, my apologies, last week to all officers between the ranks of Chief Inspector and Chief Superintendent. Sir Mark says he wants to provide, and I quote, an exit route for senior staff who were not up for the challenge of able to change or being willing or able to change. It's a voluntary exit scheme with, quotes, financial compensation. Extraordinary. The Met Police Federation describes it as a thinly veiled threat against officers who are meeting or trying to meet growing and complex demands. Rory Gagan served as a Number 10 Special Advisor on Crime and Justice and is a former officer himself serving in the Met, or served in the Met, and now Director of Safety Score, and joins me now. Safety Score is an online platform for crime data, by the way. Rory joins me now. You'll have lots of mates, blokes and women, who are probably still in the job. What are you picking up to this idea? Morning, Rory.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, and I mean, essentially, I mean, the real issue for me is that the number of mates I still have in policing is rapidly dwindling as they, like me, look for an exit and take an exit. I mean, look, firstly, just to say, the Commissioner 3 years ago inherited a force in crisis. I mean, the fact that it's taken him 3 years to reach the point of even becoming as radical as this, as to write to people and to suggest that some of them might want to leave, I think says volumes about the state of the turnaround that's been apparently underway. This should have been activity you'd expect in the first week, the first few months, or the first 100 days, right, to clear out people who are dead wood, if that's what indeed the scheme is going for. I think the reality is that last week we also saw the Met publish an absolutely bonkers report that included a whole explainer for people on whiteness, you know, full of activist language, full of sort of madness, really. And that report was sort of welcomed by the Met and the Commissioner. And in the very same week, we then see this bizarre letter that kind of, as the Met Fed describe, is a sort of thinly veiled threat. I mean, there's so many questions here. Should we be rewarding failure? You know, frontline cops, if they're not up to the job or if they put a foot wrong or even if they're just doing their job, they can find themselves hauled over the coals for years and then sort of dispatched from the organisation sort of through a heads-on-sticks strategy. And yet senior officers, apparently, who aren't up to the job, if that's what indeed they're going after, they get a payoff. The whole thing seems misjudged, to put it mildly.
Roy, can you give my listeners a sense of what the changes are that the Met deem that you should be making? Should you be more welcoming to other people? Should you be more active in a certain area? What is it that's not working for them, in their view?
Well, in their view, I mean, you'd have to ask them to be
completely
honest.
Of course, I know. I said, can you give me an insight? No, of course I can.
Yeah, so the letter itself, I mean, I think thinly veiled is well put. From my perspective, certainly, it feels like they want leaders who are sort of, you know, permanently attached their ear to the sort of the community activists, as though that they want people who are going to be pathologically listening. You know, tell me how to do my job, tell me how to do my job, rather than having a view on, for instance, the police should arrest people, the police should use stop and search, the police should do their jobs. At the end of the day, it's the police who have warrant cards. It's only the police who carry a warrant card, and we should rightly expect them to use that warrant card to help protect us and keep us safe. And so for me, I feel like the sort of the messaging behind this is, you know, we're clearing out the old guard, we're clearing out the sort of the dinosaurs, but again, they're not clear on what those behaviours are that they're wanting to get rid of. I think for me, certainly, the letter would have done well to have set that out a bit more clearly than to just sort of talk about, you know, failing to change. And we'll see what happens. I mean, we've also got, of course, the Home Office busily working away on a police reform white paper. There's some suggestion that this is about clearing the decks of a few people to create some space within the Met's budget so that they can bring in some external talent. How talented that external talent will be, we shall see. But based on past sort of history and based on the other report they published last week that sort of, as I say, talked about whiteness and blackness and other sort of progressive madness, it seems to me that this might just be about improving diversity at the top. That might just be what this is, and this might just be about shoring up a legacy for a commissioner who's really been sort of disappointing.
Yeah. Promised a lot, delivered not so much. Rory, thanks as ever. Rory Gagan is a former number 10 special advisor on crime and justice, served in the Met. Now director of Safety Score. That's an online platform for crime data. Rory, thanks for your input on that. Well, there's another group of men and women, isn't it? Who in many instances, again, far braver, I'll say it again, I'm quite happy, far braver than I. These are police officers. They have to race into situations as we so often, they race towards danger. Most of us, we've got a sense, run away. And, yeah, you need to change and you can't get out. Extraordinary. But let's come to the way that our veterans are being treated. Let's get a coming to you. Who's been hanging on the line? Robert, you've been hanging on forever. Coming to you in just a moment. Elizabeth in North London, you're onto something here with the abandonment of our brave veterans. On the strength of your guest yesterday, I donated £20 to Pilgrim Bandits. So well done, Elizabeth. That's, of course, the former SAS, 25 years service in the SAS. Elizabeth writes, it's a small amount, but I do what I can. It's not a small amount. It's tremendous, Elizabeth, and thank you. And I'm sure that Steve would be very grateful as well. Same subject, Joe in Wandsworth. I'm disgusted at the way that veterans are treated. This fortitude thing was just something that someone dreamt up in a meeting. Straight, here we go again, this line. Strangers come here and put up in four-star hotels with hot meals on demand. What on earth is going on? Paul in Linslade, what am I missing? He'd get a bed if he didn't want to home with another person. With him, or I presume, is not a veteran. Can you explain, please? Paul, I wish I could, but I can't. Robert's in Gateshead. Robert, you're on the radio. Morning.
Good morning, Nick. Nice to speak to you. It's just a heads up.
Yes, sir.
This thing with fortitude hasn't just happened in the last year under the Labour government.
Okay.
Johnny Mercer was Veterans Minister for 4 years.
He was.
Can you, because you're proud of your journalism, can you find out how many people he got off the streets of London?
Yes, I will try. But are you asking a question to which you know the answer, Robert, just so I can save my team a bit of work? Do you know how many it is?
No, I don't know the answer, okay. But I'd like to know the answer, because his wife, Felicity, called the police on some veterans protesting on a bridge against Johnny Mercer.
Right, okay. And you want to know, that's a very fair point. So, sorry, was Op Fortitude brought in by Mr. Mercer as minister, or prior to him, do we know?
I do not know.
Okay, sir.
You can't just blame something that just happened in the last year when he was Minister for Veterans for 4 years and did nothing.
Robert, we will find that out. In defence for what I'm doing, I don't recall Mercer ever giving me the phone line. Mr. Mercer ever giving me the phone line and saying, we need to publicise this, Nick. And I sense if he had, I'd done exactly what I did with the Labour politician, which is walk out of the studio, turn to my producer and say, tell you what, let's ring the phone number, find a veteran, see what the reality is. But, Robert, that's a fair point. We need to find out. But the current blame has to go to the current government, I would say. Robert, have a good day. Joe's in Chippenham. Joe, your reaction. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. My point that I'd like to make is that we have we currently have a housing crisis in the UK because of the previous government's total failure to build any new housing.
Yes, I agree. Totally.
Now, obviously, future governments are going to be. I mean, I've heard of 70 new homes going up near me as we speak.
Right.
Now, at the moment, these new developments get a certain percentage of housing that is reserved for housing association, for low-income families, things like that. What I want to know is, why aren't we reserving any of this for our veterans?
I can't answer it, Joe. I am genuinely so distressed about this for the veterans. Yeah. It's unfair on every, pardon my language, every bloody level. This is unfair. Yeah. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. Now we have the situation with the hotels and things like that. Now hotels only solve a short term problem, yeah. but the yeah. problems that these veterans are having is long term. My dad was a Royal Engineer. He was a combat engineer, and he went nose to nose with claymores and mines and bombs and all kinds of things.
Oh my God, what a brave
man! Yeah, very, very brave man. Now when he came home, he was lucky enough to have a support network in place. He had a very loving family. Mm. It was okay, but not everybody has that. So there should be a provision made through local government, and there should be easy access to a certain percentage of housing. And I'm sorry to say this, but it should be a higher percentage than what the low-income families currently get, because the low-income families, while they're coming from some pretty horrific situations, have never run onto a minefield full of claymores and risked life and limb.
Amazing work by your father. You should be very proud, and I'm sure you are, of your dad. I'm proud of my dad. He didn't do the sort of service that your dad went through, by the way. And it is totally wrong. And don't be sorry to say it. You're right. These men and women, I'll say it again, do things and see things the rest of us can't even imagine. Joe, thank you. Lee in Watford. This is about the call we just took from Robert, and I'm really grateful, Lee. Thank you. This is Lee saying now, I've just searched the history of your interviews. Johnny Mercer said clearly the veteran issue was solved 4 years ago. Seems he lied, question mark. We're going to find out, Lee. Don't worry, Lee and Watford, we won't let this go. The MOD got extra funding to assist local authority housing provision. Why is Jim and his partner not calling their local authority? Have enormous respect for veterans, but the last three governments failed them. At least this one is trying. OK, Lee, I'm happy to read that out, and we will make that part of our report for tomorrow. This is a clever one from Christopher. It probably works better on text, but I'll try and explain it because it uses the equal sign. Christopher. You arrive on a boat equals hotel plus food plus money. Born in the UK equals we are full. Fair point, isn't it? More on this, and also after the news.
Leaked screenshots show staff at one of the UK's biggest dental companies mocking patients. Smile White says it's completely contrary to their company culture. I'm Phoebe Abbott-Zazy with the exclusive for LBC.
Yes, we'll get our teeth into that shocking exclusive after the news. 8:45, LBC News headlines then. Lottie Morley.
The White House has played down new emails from Jeffrey Epstein in which he speaks about Donald Trump. Energy Secretary Ed Miliband has told Nick he's not interested in becoming Prime Minister. And official figures show the economy grew by 0.1% between July and September. LBC weather, showers in southern Scotland and northern England, a mix of sunshine and cloud elsewhere, highs of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M20 remains closed eastbound between junctions 8 at Leeds Castle and 9 at Ashford. It's because of the ongoing investigation. There are delays from junction 7 at Detling Hill. Also on the motorways, it's very busy on the M25 clockwise from junction 9 at Leatherhead to 10 at the A3 after a car broke down. And also it's slow anti-clockwise at junction 27 at the M11. A car broke down here as well, but also has been recovered. Also, these problems continue. Dollis Hill Station, the tube station is closed, and Duddon Hill Lane remains closed as well. It's because of the ongoing police investigation. Also on the underground, there are severe delays on the Piccadilly line, and also there are minor delays on the Central line.
This is LBC.
Settle in for those longer evenings with EETV and give your TV and film the ultimate flex.
So I can watch all my crime dramas.
While we've got the Boxing Day footy on.
That's right. Switch up subscriptions with Netflix, Now, Discovery Plus, and loads more. All powered by our ultra-reliable full fiber.
Sign me up.
Switch to our award-winning bundles today.
New customers, 62% UK availability. Terms apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Oh, recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helps advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Waitrose presents...
I really fancy a mince pie.
One man's selfless journey from sofa to kitchen.
I'm getting up.
for a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, and zesty limoncello.
With some cream.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, zesty limoncello, and a dollop of fresh cream.
Limoncello.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores subject to availability.
Julie could part exchange her car. Or check out We Buy Any Car. She could be unsure if she got a good deal part exchanging. Or have cash in the bank with more bargaining power to get a bigger car for her five-a-side team. Totally played. Or total player. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
The £5 meal deal from McDonald's. Get a cheeseburger or mayo chicken, medium fries, four McNuggets and a medium soft drink for guess what? That's right, £5. It's not called the £5 meal deal for nothing. From 11 a.m. Not available on delivery. Carbonated soft drink upgrade fees apply. Participating restaurants subject to availability.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
My goodness me, you're furious about those veterans. I'm pleased to say you're furious, because obviously it's right that we've identified that story, and we'll come back to your reaction on that in just a moment. Have I told you the time? It's 11 minutes before 9 if I haven't. Now, the story we mentioned just before the headlines on LBC. Whistleblowers have made serious allegations against one of the UK's biggest dental firms, Smile White. They claim staff mocked patients while sharing sensitive photos in workplace chats. Other leaked messages show the company's founders referring to prospective African clients as UNICEF. The company says the behaviour described is, quotes, completely unacceptable, close quotes, and not reflective of its culture. LBC's Phoebe Abruzzese has this exclusive report.
We own two of the biggest brands in UK dentistry, Smile White and Yorkshire Dental Suite. Last year we did circa £60 million in revenue. This year we'll do £200 million. I know we'll do it. I know for a fact.
Hassan and Hussein Dalgoose, known as the twin dentists on TikTok, have built Smile White into one of the UK's biggest cosmetic dental firms, with Premier League footballers as customers, a polished social media image and hundreds of thousands of followers. But screenshots leaked to LBC show a darker side to Smile White. Staff in group chats mocked patients for their appearance, and leadership referred to prospective clients with African-sounding names as UNICEF, a code word they describe themselves as Africans that can't afford treatment. It's language the pair admit was inappropriate and cause for regret. Anna, whose identity we're protecting, worked at the company in spring.
It's a bit dodgy how the sales team would share pictures. People think they're sending these medical pictures to a dentist or orthodontist, but all that happens is that you've got all these 18-year-old salespeople sharing it round, laughing with colleagues.
These messages, shared in a group chat of around 50 employees, saw some staff mocking clients for their looks. Black patients were compared to hippos and the movie character Big Mama. A South Asian man was likened to an Oompa Loompa, and slurs about learning disabilities were used to describe patients. In other messages, people ridiculed for their weight. A woman was called ugly as f***, and an older client was referred to as an old bat. Nick Smith worked in the sales team.
If a customer didn't fit, you know, their specific look, they would be mocked. The people that were involved in this sort of behaviour would see that as something they could really target and hone in on to get a laugh from the rest of the group, which was a disgrace, to be fair.
Though the twins were not involved in the sales group where these offensive messages were shared, other texts show senior staff, including founder Hussein, using a code UNICEF to describe people with African-sounding names. In the messages, Hussein says UNICEF means Africans who are too poor to afford treatment. One senior manager had worked alongside Hassan and Hussein for years. He was fired this summer, but says he witnessed this behaviour.
Yeah, it's just crazy how they sort of get through talking about people.
Smile White's parent company, the Yorkshire Dental Suite, YDS, told LBC that the offensive messages, which were sent in March, are historic and say they are completely contrary to its culture. They've said that changes have been made to strengthen oversight and data protection obligations were handled appropriately. Company founders Hassan and Hussein insist they were unaware of what was happening in the sales team group chat and took action as soon as they found out. They added they acknowledge and regret use of UNICEF, an inappropriate word to describe some leads from an international source. They deny that their use of this word is indicative of their character or the wider culture of the business, saying they've got a deep respect for the dignity of the patients who entrust the company with their care.
Phoebe Abruzzese reporting with that exclusive for LBC. 8 to 9 is the time. Let's come back to the conversation with which you started the hour. The appalling way our military veterans are being treated under Operation Fortitude, which I'm very happy to remind, of course, it would appear the Conservatives failed possibly on the same level, but it was the Labour Minister who told me on Monday that it would deliver a bed overnight, and now we know the reality. Earlier, Operation Fortitude managed to deliver a tent to one veteran, but she didn't get a bed. And Jim, the story that we've highlighted, or the case that we've highlighted the most, yes, we've got a bed for Jim, he got a bed for his dog, but not his partner. Jim's come back from a tour of Afghanistan, or had come back from a tour of Afghanistan. Rudy's in Bristol. Rudy, your reaction to this. Good morning.
Okay, before I make my point, I'd like to ask, why would anyone want to join the armed forces if this is the way they reward them when they finish their service?
Thank God they do, though. I can't answer that, but thank goodness that they do. Don't know where we'd be without them.
I mean, I'm outraged about this, you know, like your previous callers that sort of stole my thunder, really, saying that they can find instant accommodation for asylum seeker, but not a vet. So why don't they put a vet in a hotel if they can put an asylum seeker in a hotel? Or kick an asylum seeker out and put him in instead?
Because it, quote, breaches their human rights, I'm sure is one of the reasons.
What about the human rights of the war vet?
They don't care about them. Mate, I'm on your side. I'm totally with you. They don't make a loud enough noise. That's the problem. And I think successive governments, but certainly they don't care.
It's absolutely outrageous, you know. Like I said, if I was a young person today, on that principle, they want to get people in the armed forces, I would not join the armed forces, I would not fight for my country, if this is the way they would treat me when something goes wrong, if I got shot or I got wounded or whatever, I wouldn't do it, on principle, because there's no backup for me after my service.
Totally right, Rudy. I agree with everything you're saying. And remember, we're having this conversation just a couple of days after Remembrance Day, a few more days after Remembrance Sunday, when all those politicians stood there at the cenotaph with very grave faces, wearing their poppy, heads bowed, saluting then the men and women who went to war, some of whom never came back, some of whom did come back, very seriously wounded, and some of whom we can't even get a bed for the night. But don't worry. Come over on a dinghy from France, and we'll put you in a 3-star hotel. How does this even add up? Point just made from coming to you, Jim. Tina in Kent. I tell our veterans, here we are, get over to Calais, come back in a dinghy. They'll be lauded and looked after because illegal migrants are worth more than our brave military veterans. It's disgusting how our own veterans are treated compared to the boat people. Thank you for that one. Same subject. It's John saying exactly the same thing. Jump in a dinghy, get to Dover. Vicky says, many widows or widowers would be pleased to give a veteran a home. Needs to say there cannot be anybody with mental health problems because the elderly wouldn't be able to cope with them. But why don't you mention that to your callers? Well, you have to be very careful, of course, because some of these poor, very brave men and women, as you rightly say, Vicky, will have all sorts of emotional problems. And they won't just sort of settle in easily overnight, I don't think. But at least you're showing that you care. Jim in Leeds. Jim, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. How are you?
Well, I'm angry, my friend. How are you, more importantly, about
that
this?
That makes two of us, then, yeah. That makes two of us.
Go on.
I'm going to say, great show as always. Called into you, but I listened for a long time.
Thank you.
Yeah, this subject touches the string because, I'm currently serving in His Majesty's Forces.
Are you? Okay, sir. Well done.
I've done a couple of tours. I've done 3 or 4 tours, actually. But, yeah, I'm upset, angry, but not surprised. Not in the slightest.
Oh dear, my heart sinks. Why are you not surprised, sir?
Well, this government, the latest government, we're almost forgotten about. But I mean, it's the positive I've taken from today listening to this so far is the amount of support that's come through in the texts and the emails and the calls that you've had already.
Jim, I've only read a tiny percent. I could now fill all the way until James arrives just reading texts and emails, but I won't, but I can. That's the level, Jim.
No, that's good. And hopefully, I mean, like you said, if you're not going to let this drop, I think it would be good if we can kind of hold people to account on this. Yep. But I mean, a couple of points that I was thinking of, a lot of people are calling in regarding the migrant hotels and valid points and that. But like the MOD sites, listening to the ex-MOD sites that are going to house the 900.
Yeah.
Would that not, I mean, if you can't get a veteran into a hotel, could we not have something like that?
Yeah.
Because if anything, they're going to feel more at home there because having lived on a barracks for however many years that they've served. Although, and then a second point was surplus SFA housing. I mean, the amount of camps and that I've been to where there's army housing that's just sat empty.
Really?
Why not allocate two or three of them, put multiple veterans in, because then they're in similar surroundings. They're surrounded by current serving members of the forces. And then there's also that support network. I mean, one of the biggest struggles for military leaving is you lose connections and you don't live near a barracks, or, you know, it's you lose that kind of sense of belonging.
Can I ask you a question, Jim? I don't know how long ago you signed up. Are you enjoying your time in the military? Do you regret it? Do you wish you'd done something else? Where are you now on that?
So I've done 21 years, joined the
Good
06.
God. Wow.
I've got 2 years left before I have to find a real job. but I'll try and stay on for serving as long as I can. Do I regret it? No, I've loved every minute of it. There's been highs, there's been lows. But it's not the job that you do, it's the people that you work with.
Okay.
And
21 years service,
it.
I mean, you take us back to, gosh, Tony Blair's days. Has it been the same under every government, or is it particularly bad under the Conservatives, or particularly bad under this administration? What would you say, Jim?
To be fair, I think it was better, it sounds wrong, but it was better during Tellick and Herrick, because we were, I mean, the armed forces was riding the crest of the wave then, because we had investment, because we needed the kit and equipment. And I mean, when I deployed to Iraq, the kit and equipment we deployed with then compared to my last tour of Afghan was, you know, the equipment and the kit got better.
Yep.
And then since the conflicts have kind of died down, which is a good thing, it's forgotten.
Is it true? You mentioned Operation Tellick. That was, of course, Iraq. Is it true we sent you blokes and women with guns that didn't have bullets and Land Rovers that were soft shell and just about everything that we could, and radios that didn't work? Was that true?
Well, definitely not the radios that didn't work as a signals guy. But I was the latter tour of Tellick, I wouldn't be able to comment fully as a still serving.
What are you going to do in 2 years, lastly, Jim? Got any ideas? I must go to news in a minute, but I'm fascinated speaking to you. What do you want to do?
I want to get into support and help. I love instructing, so I love passing on knowledge and that. But when you hear the veterans, I mean, I've got a couple of friends that are struggling, but the network is there. And I suppose if there's any veterans out there that are struggling, just reach out, because there will always be an ex-service man or woman that will get in touch.
Jim, thank you for your call. Thank you for your service, 21 years. And I honestly, my friend, I assure you, I could read the emails and the texts and everything for another hour. We will move on. But Jim, there is the feeling out there. Thanks again for your service. After the news.
Monday, Monday.
Slumps to 0.1% GDP. What does that actually mean for you? Plus,
for thy sweet love remembered, such wealth brings, that then I scorned change my state with kings.
Dame Judi Dench reading Shakespeare's Sonnet 29, and there is a shake-up of the way Shakespeare is taught in the schools, and I'll be giving you more details on that after the 9 o'clock news. LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, senior Republicans are calling for the full release of documents relating to Jeffrey Epstein. Thousands of files were published yesterday showing the sex offender claiming Donald Trump once spent hours with a victim. US political analyst Charles Feldman has told Nick it's not a good look for the US president.
It certainly raises some very serious questions
about whether or not President Trump has been honest when he talks about his relationship, which we know he had, but which he claims he severed several years ago. But it does, you know, paint a picture of Donald Trump perhaps not being very honest about the extent of his relationship with Epstein.
Donald Trump denies any wrongdoing in relation to Epstein. UK economic growth slowed to 0.1% over the past 3 months, lower than expected. The Office for National Statistics says it's partly down to a fall in car production after a major cyber attack on Jaguar Land Rover. Energy Secretary Ed Miliband has told LBC he has no interest in becoming Prime Minister. Sir Keir Starmer says he will investigate after anonymous attacks suggesting some of his team were plotting a leadership coup. Conservative peer Lord Barwell told Nick he's never seen anything like it.
It's the first time I've seen Number 10 launch a coup against itself. It is quite remarkable. You've got a budget coming up. You and I both know it's going to be a really difficult budget. What the government is trying to do is demonstrate that it's taking painful decisions to deliver stability. Why would Number 10, just before that, basically acknowledge the Prime Minister's position is insecure? It's insane.
The UK's first small nuclear power station is going to be built in North Wales. The government says it will bring up to 3,000 jobs to Anglesey. It will cost the government £2.5 billion. And some of the biggest names in the music industry are urging the government to do more to target ticket touts. Coldplay and Radiohead are on the list of artists calling for a cap on ticket resale prices. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 27 points at 98.83. The pound buys $1.31 and a €1.13. LBC weather, showers in southern Scotland and northern England this morning. A mix of sunshine and cloud elsewhere with highs of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Christmas is coming. You're either hosting the crowds at home.
They'll be here any minute.
Or driving to guest at the in-laws. Streaming movies in the front room or cartoons in the backseat. Prepping the party playlist or making your way on maps.
Rerouting again.
So whether you're hosting or guesting, you need the UK's best mobile network and broadband technology. EE does more.
UK's best network. Root Matrix data H125. Full fibre is the UK's most reliable broadband technology. Ofcom's broadband terminology research March 2023. Verify at ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 4 minutes after nine on Thursday, November the 11th. It's slump time when it comes to our growth. The last set of figures prior to the budget later this month, 0.1%, way behind some other countries. How is a figure calculated? What does it mean to you? And how is growth to be stimulated? Plus a completely change of tack later in the hour. The Royal Shakespeare Company is a curriculum now aimed to transform how the Bard, how Shakespeare is taught in secondary schools. And some of his works are true classics. Dame Helen Mirren from Antony and Cleopatra.
In his livery walked crown. And crownets, realms and islands were as plates dropped from his pocket. Think you there was or might be such a man as this?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
I wouldn't know how to define it, but the ability to act or to be an orator. When you see it, or when you hear it, when you heard Dame Helen there, I don't know how they've just got it, these people, haven't they? Just the way they deliver their lines. Quite incredible. Dame Helen, by the way, is quoted in the story. We're doing this later, but just say. Dame Helen says, "You're so right for Shakespeare when you're 13, 14, 15, 16 years old. It's the perfect age to be exposed. I appreciate for many of you, you are turning over, pulling the duvet up because you don't give a damn about Shakespeare. But I bet they tried to teach you it at school. Did it engage you? If not, and it's like saying, why don't you like it? It's like saying, why don't you like the taste of chicken? I don't know, I just don't like the taste of chicken, Nick. Why did Shakespeare not work for you? You can tell in my voice, fantastic works. My favourite authors, I've told you countless times, is Charles Dickens, but Shakespeare is brilliant. That's later in the show. Now, in the first hour of the show, as part of our regular look at the world of business and finance, Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM, explained why the latest growth figures are so gloomy.
Yeah, pretty grim figures out from the Office of National Statistics for growth in the third quarter, July to September, coming in at 0.1%, which is basically coming in at nothing. I was just looking back now, Q1 of this year was quite successful. The quarterly growth there was about 0.7%. And that was largely because so many manufacturers and exporters were sort of front-loading all their activity to get ahead of the tariffs coming in. It went down to about 0.3% in Q2. Now it's down again to 0.1% in Q3. Is there a pattern here? I rather suspect there is. We actually know that growth in September, and as far as 1 month can be measured, was negative. Overall, manufacturing dragged down these most recent growth figures, and some people are attributing that to the complete stall in car manufacturing from one of our biggest manufacturers. But if you're starting to pin the blame on individual companies and their individual problems, you really are in some difficulty. So very disappointing growth figures, not the backdrop the Chancellor wants ahead of her budget. All of the reaction from economists and analysts in my inbox this morning says, look, this is all still to do with the impact of higher taxes and lower business confidence from last year's budget. Well, what are we going to get in a budget in 10 days' time? Higher taxes and, I suspect, further blows to business confidence. So I'm afraid it really is quite a depressing state of affairs.
Now, in the first half of the show, I also spoke with the Energy Secretary, Ed Miliband, and he told me he and the rest of the government will be disappointed.
Well, they're disappointing figures. And look, there are some global headwinds. There were some specific factors around JLR and the cyber attack, which have affected these figures. But I'm making no bones about it. It's disappointing. We're focused on growth because we want to raise living standards. And, you know, we, and I know the Chancellor will be redoubling her efforts. We all redouble our efforts. What we're announcing today is important. The one little fact for you, Nick, the net zero economy, some people don't like net zero, I know, grew three times faster than the economy as a whole last year. This is the growth opportunity of the 21st century. China's seizing it. India's seizing it. We need to seize it. That's what we're about.
That's Ed Miliband. Now, these figures are weaker than economists had predicted. We'll be speaking with leading economist Lena Halligan in just a moment. They were hoping for 0.2. But journalism is nothing if it's not context. So I asked one of my colleagues to look around the rest of the world. So we're coming in at 0.1%. How do we fare? Well, most of Europe actually is roughly the same. France popping up a little bit at 0.5%. Elsewhere in the world, we move out of Europe. Japan, 0.5%. The United States, when annualised, 3.8%. That gives you pause for thought, doesn't it? Liam Halligan, who is, I say, an economist, journalist, broadcaster, he writes the Economic Agenda column for the Sunday Telegraph, joins me now. Good to have you on board, buddy. OK, let's start at the very beginning, as they once said in the song. How is GDP calculated? Morning, Chip.
Good to be with you, Nick. GDP is basically the sum total of all transactions in an economy over a period of time. It stands for gross domestic product, not the catchiest name in the world, as the nation quakes under its collective duvet in the wake of these figures. But as we just heard from Christian May, they're not good figures at all. Ahead of Rachel Reeves' budget on Wednesday, November the 26th, less than a fortnight now. And I have to say, it does appear as if this government is squeezing the life out of the economy with ever higher taxes. You've got a lot of very belligerent Labour backbenchers that don't want any kind of spending restraints at all, not even slowdowns in the rate of increase of welfare spending. That is pulling the public finances apart. The only answer Labour have got ideologically, politically, is to raise taxes. They did that massively last October. That was the steepest tax rising budget, Nick, since the early 1990s last October. And it looks as if we're in for another one now.
For Mrs. Jones in Clapham, for my listeners, for the readers of the Sunday Telegraph, what does it mean to them in their daily lives?
What it means to them, that they'll already be feeling it. They'll feel the fact that, you know, at work, people leave and the bosses don't replace them because they're worried about business confidence. They feel it in their bills, the fact that their energy bills are going up. You just cited France there. Why is the French economy growing faster than us? Because they've got much cheaper energy, Nick, because they've got lots and lots of nukes. In America, which is growing pretty much like gangbusters, you've also got energy that's about a third of the price of energy here for our firms and households. So we have seen a slowdown in growth. You can feel it also in business confidence. We're not building lots of new factories. People can feel it in the housing market, which is parts of the housing market have stalled because families haven't got the guts to back themselves and say, we're going to push, we're going to get a bigger house, we're going to make that move. Everybody's waiting for this budget. It's going to be punitive. I think it's going to slow the economy even more. And this is the problem. This is why financial markets are worried, Nick. We hear about bond markets all the time. What do they mean? Nothing to do with 007. It's the fact that investors lend governments money, 10, 15 billion, 20 billion quid a month, so the government can make the numbers add up. And those investors are demanding high rates of interest now because they're worried that the public finances are too stretched.
Liam, what are the economic levers a government can pull to try and stimulate growth?
Well, a lot of people in the Labour Party would say, oh, like Ed Miliband, you just heard it from him. Oh, the net zero economy is growing, he says. It's only growing, Ed, because it's massively subsidised by the government. And a lot of that activity is government activity, which is being driven by borrowed money. So it's completely unsustainable. The best thing the government can do, Nick, is get out of the way. I'm here from the government. I'm here to help, as Ronald Reagan said, the nine most dangerous words in the English language. Taxation is too high. That's a big part of it. But also there's too much regulation out there. You know, try building something, try getting permission to do things off the government. It's very, very difficult. So I would say, and a lot of economists would agree with me, that the government has to start signalling it is going to get the public finances under control. That is going to mean some tough decisions on public spending. We're living beyond our means, and we need to lower regulation, and we need to tell the world that Britain is open for business. We need to say we want to lower that rate of corporation tax. We want to bring the tax burden down. We're not going to whack exit taxes on you when you leave. That is a gut punch for enterprise. And yet it seems, Nick, and I say this with regret, I want the country to do well. It seems that the only answer that Labour have got for any problem is more government.
Lastly, and you quite rightly, you've referenced that we have a Labour government. If Rishi Sunak had somehow triumphed 16, 17 months ago, and allowing that Labour would point to economic waves against them, the COVID, the problems with Ukraine, are they the authors of their own misfortune this morning, or are there some headwinds that it's difficult that are going to buffet them?
Look, I always say in these discussions, because we need to be even-handed, Nick, that the Tories did not give Labour a good economic inheritance last July when Labour came into office. The national debt was already above 90% of GDP. The tax burden was already at a 70-year high. So Labour inherited a tricky fiscal situation. I'll always acknowledge that. But it does strike me that Rachel Reeves and this Labour government have made a bad situation even worse. Almost the first thing they did was massively whack up taxation and borrowing, as I said, a massive bung to their mates in the public sector unions with more pay rises. Oh, let's jack up the minimum wage for youngsters by 17%, which is what Reeves did. So then we can brag about it on the news. But business pays those costs, and that feeds directly into inflation. And you talk to ordinary folk, the idea that inflation's only like 4% a year, that's crazy. The cost of living's going up by a lot more than that.
Liam, always enjoy speaking with you. I must leave it there only for time reasons. Liam Halligan, thank you. Economist and broadcaster, writes the Sunday Telegraph's Economic Agenda column. If we're speaking about Sunday newspapers, I should share with you, and I'm very grateful. It was the Sunday Times Business Drinks last night at a leading London hotel, and I've been privileged to go there for the last probably 6 years, I think. And you mix with extraordinarily successful businessmen and women, and a smashing of MPs as well. I have to tell you, my friend, I have never known the mood as gloomy as it was. Interestingly, last year, it's always held around this time, obviously, as we come to Christmas, they were all saying, this budget that Chancellor Reeves, this is a disaster. There will be less jobs. There'll be fewer jobs this time next year. And guess what? Yesterday, when we met, it was revealed 1,000 jobs are being lost a day. 1,000 jobs. And to Liam Halligan's point, have you noticed at your workplace, when a job goes, they don't replace, just make people work harder? The last budget was a disaster. What does this one hold? And to Liam's point, inflation feels a lot more, doesn't it, when you go to Sainsbury's or Tesco, Asda, wherever you go? Feels a lot more than 5%. How much is it, though, the government's own fault? Here's a fun fact for you. Well, I find it fun. You know how we pretty much know what the budget is going to have? Pretty much. It was on this day, in 1947, that then-Chancellor Hugh Dalton resigned after he disclosed proposals from his budget minutes before he delivered. Minutes. And he quit instantly. Now, they tell us a month out. How times have changed. Coming up later in the hour, we celebrate the works of the great bard.
Tomorrow. And tomorrow. And tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to the last syllable of recorded time.
How do you deliver lines like that? Sir Ian McKellen, of course, in Macbeth. 9:17. LBC News headlines, Lottie Morley.
The White House says leaked emails from Jeffrey Epstein, which reference the US president, are a manufactured hoax. Sir Keir Starmer says he'll investigate number 10 briefings, which led to a leadership row. And North Wales has been chosen as the location for the UK's first small nuclear power station. LBC weather, showers in southern Scotland and northern England this morning, a mix of sunshine and cloud elsewhere, highs of 16.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M20 has reopened eastbound at Junction 8 at Leeds Castle, but there are still severe delays back to Junction 7 at Detling Hill. Very busy on the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 28 at the A12 to 27 at the M11. A car broke down, that was recovered, then there was an accident. All the lanes are open now, but it's still very slow. In Deptford, Evelyn Street remains closed both ways after an accident, and in Neasden, Duddon Hill Lane remains closed both ways because of an ongoing police investigation, which also means that Dollis Hill tube station is closed. Also on the underground, there are severe delays on the Piccadilly line, and that was because of a trap problem from earlier, and there are minor delays on the central line.
This is LBC.
In her framing shop, Sally's got an eye for precision, plus a computer full of customer orders and precious memories. There are locks on the doors and sensors on the windows. But what's securing it all is BT Cybersecurity. With business antivirus, cloud protection and security awareness training, it helps stop threats before they strike, keeping sensitive business data safe. Because protecting your business takes more than just toughened glass and a steady hand. Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Search BT Business Cybersecurity.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Oh, recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it. And there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
With Lloyd's Home Insurance, there's £50,000 to be won. When you cover the glassware no one's actually allowed to use, or the garden shed, a.k.a. your fortress of calm. Rated excellent on Trustpilot, you can be confident with your cover when you take out a new home insurance policy and be in for a chance to win £50,000. Get a quote with Lloyd's today. Buy a new home insurance policy direct from us by the 31st of December 2025. Offer T's and C's apply. Policy terms, limits and exclusions apply.
Waitrose presents...
I really fancy a mince pie.
One man's selfless journey from sofa to kitchen.
I'm getting up.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots and zesty limoncello.
With some cream.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, zesty limoncello, and a dollop of fresh cream.
Limoncello.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores subject to availability.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
And here's another thought before I come to your calls. Imagine trying to run a business. It's all very well. I'm sitting here as a journalist, chatting to a fellow journalist and talking about how awful it is. He's getting money from the Sunday Telegraph. I'm fortunate enough to be getting money from LBC. Imagine if you're trying to run a business through all of this. I'll give you those figures again, because as I said, context is everything when it comes to journalism. I can't just tell you, GDP is down to 0.1%. What does that mean? Well, it means if we look elsewhere around the world, it's not particularly good. France, 0.5%. Japan, 0.5%. United States, 3.8%. Jamie's in Chelmsford. Jamie, you're on the radio. What does this mean to you? Good morning.
So
morning, Nick. Sorry to bother you.
No, you're bothered at all. You're keeping me in... You're not bothering me, my friend. You're keeping me in work by calling me. I'm very grateful to you.
No, that's absolutely fine. Big fan of the show, so thanks very much.
Thank you, sir.
Basically, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I do know that the answer in some part of it is we need to get rid of Rachel Reeves because she hasn't got a clue. She hasn't got a clue. I think that if you're going to keep putting taxes up, there has to be a relaxant somewhere. There has to be. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the whole country will be out of work.
It's what line are you in? How is this affecting you personally in your wallet or your pocket?
Okay, well, I'll give you an idea. I put every penny I had into a restaurant 18 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Subsequently gone bust.
Well, I'm so sorry.
That's it. I mean, that's in a nutshell, because basically what you've got is you've got people in the streets. I don't want to bark on about or go off the subject that you're talking about, obviously, but just to give you an idea, you put your heart and soul into something, setting up something, whatever business that is.
Yeah.
Okay, and to be competitive, your prices, you can't look cheap, nobody likes cheap, and you have to be competitive. Well, that's okay. So if you can imagine, 1 minute you're writing your restaurant menus out, and it's cost you £400 or £500 to do the menus.
Yeah.
Okay. A week later, the price of fruit and veg and meat goes up. Well, you can't change those menus.
No.
And it is so up and down. That's just that particular industry. But then...
Had you run restaurants before, just out of interest, or always had been a lifetime's goal?
Do you know what? I had an itch to do it for about 12 years, but I have friends behind me that are restaurant owners and bits and pieces, so I didn't go in totally blind. No,
right,
of course not.
Okay.
So from that point of view, then... Everybody had to pay the pensions for people. Then the minimum rate went up.
Yeah.
Well, forget restaurants. Don't we wonder why there's possibly going to be 11,000 venues closing, as was reported on your show or on LBC the other day.
Mm.
11,000 venues. The thing is, if you keep putting taxes up, people aren't earning enough to cover their daily bills as it is. How can you keep putting tax up and expect people to be okay with that? You can't. Me personally, scrap VAT. Get rid of it. It's the biggest con out. Because if you buy, for example, in a restaurant, if you buy food, there's no VAT on it.
Right.
But we have to sell it plus VAT, including VAT. So the government's already made 20% out of you before you've even turned on a light switch.
How long did the restaurant run?
It ran for 18 months.
And what sort of food was it?
To be fair, very sort of, not cordon bleu, but not high end, very, it was just a lovely feel. A really lovely feel, cosmopolitan, that kind of thing.
Lovely. What are you doing now?
I've gone back to building. I was building for 40 years, yeah, and that is really grim.
Is it real? I was going to ask, how's that trade? So that's
equal. And I'm sure there's lots of builders listening to this, and I'm sure they would agree and hopefully would ring in. If you do a quote, certainly over the last 2-3 years, if you've been doing a quote, for instance, July, with the expectancy of that job to happen in October, between the day that you've quoted it and the day that you actually start it, guarantee you some of the materials will have gone up around about 5%.
Well, it's bizarre. I'm actually speaking to someone the other day who's done a bit of work for plasterboard, apparently. The price of plasterboard has rocketed.
It's a joke.
Mm.
You could get a sheet of plasterboard, was like £5-6. I think it's about £11 a sheet now.
It's more than doubled, isn't it? That's what I was told.
Yeah,
anyway.
More than doubled. Mm. And when you look back at COVID, COVID was COVID, and I honestly don't believe that no matter what government was in, they wouldn't have known how to handle it properly. No one's ever come across that before, whatever.
No.
But there was people on the internet selling £6 bags of plaster, £7 bags of plaster, for £40 a bag.
And were people paying it?
Yeah, of course they were, because they wanted to get the job done.
I'm very sorry about your restaurant. At least you gave it a shot. And you got some friends help you, and you're back working. Jamie, I will leave it there because I've got to move on. Thank you for your call. Good luck with your position now. Bob Mann says, the fiscal measures introduced in the government's April 2025 budget have had a material impact on business growth. Increased taxation, higher national insurance contributions have raised employment costs significantly, discouraging both recruitment and expansion. We've already seen a direct effect on our international client base. Several organisations reducing headcount, transferring work to the US and to the EU, where the cost of employment is now comparatively lower. the flow of international projects into the UK has contracted. I have abbreviated that, but thanks for your input, Bob Mann. We'll have more on that in a moment, but let's have a complete change of pace. I loved it when I was at school. Did you? Because you can't beat a bit of the Bard.
In his livery walked crowns and crownets. Realms and islands were as plates dropped from his pocket. Think you there was, or might be, such a man as this?
Dame Helen Mirren, reading from Antony and Cleopatra. Now, at Antony Cleopatra, Dame Helen attended with Sir Ian McKellen, the Royal Shakespeare Company's new curriculum aimed to transform how Shakespeare is taught in secondary schools. And someone else was there, Sarah Crompton, theatre critic and co-host of the What's On Stage podcast. That's the What's On Stage podcast, and joins me now. What did you learn, Sarah, from yesterday? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, it was, I learned that the RSC has devised a curriculum which is attempting to make all kids enjoy studying Shakespeare. I'm interested you liked it. I struggled with it a bit at school, and the research shows that the real sort of critical moment in studying Shakespeare is between being about 13 and 16, because it seems a bit stuffy. The language is quite hard. I remember taking my own children to Shakespeare and thinking, you know, actually this is quite hard. So the RSC has come up with this curriculum devised over quite extensive research, which seeks to just give children a chance to engage more with it, to let them be actors and directors and to make decisions about the plays rather than just reading them. And that, you know, that dreadful thing of taking turns around the room with Helen Mirren talked about, you know, it's so awful when you're all sitting there and you've got to read, you know, Spear Carrier number one.
Now, I'm sorry, and I understand that you didn't instantly engage with Shakespeare, Sarah, but how much is it down, do you think, to the teacher that you've got?
Well, do you know, one of the things I learned yesterday which really surprised me is that quite often the person teaching Shakespeare isn't an English teacher. So quite often it might have been roped in, it might be somebody roped in to teach drama or something, and they won't have really got any ideas about Shakespeare. So I think that the idea of this curriculum, which they hope to get into to all secondary schools by 2030, is that it gives everybody a level of expertise about how you do get into the 10 most popular plays. And I talked to some of the students who had been studying it in Cornwall. They'd been practicing with it, if you like. And they said they just liked it because everything was there in one place. There was a really good research pack. There were ideas of things you could do in the classroom. And they said it did make it more accessible. And the other thing that caught my attention was that the research, they've done quite a lot of work on this, and it also shows that language skills improve massively if you can get to grips with Shakespeare. But there's something, there is a link about studying it that makes oracy, which is of course the thing we're all aiming for now, better, in especially in children who haven't got much access to those kind of books, really.
Sarah, lastly, I'm going to give the answer to my question first to give you time to think. My answer would be Macbeth. Sarah, if I was to ask you what would be entry level for Shakespeare, a play that would, or even to read the play as well, that would be accessible, I would say Macbeth because there's a heck of a lot of action in it and it even opens like a movie. What one would you say that, or would you point to another one?
Well, you know, I mean, that is one of the 10 most popular and it's much studied. I always find Macbeth a bit hard because of the witches. Okay. I mean, you know, there's quite a lot there. But so I would say Hamlet just because I think that has got a young person who's struggling with his life at the centre of it.
Grateful for your input. Sarah Crompton is theatre critic and co-host of the What's On Stage podcast and was at that event with the Shakespeare curriculum. Your memories, good and possibly bad, of trying to study Shakespeare in school after this. Plus, we will return to me, for me anyway, to what is the story of the day.
I'm Jim, a homeless veteran, and earlier this week I called Operation Fortitude to seek housing support. I was put on hold for 26 minutes before being promised to call back. Well, yesterday they did phone me back. Hear how the call went down later on in the show.
We talked at this in the previous hour of the show. If you weren't listening, you will be shocked as to what happened to Jim, and we will return to that. Brave enough to serve in Afghanistan, comes back to this homeless scheme, which has proved to be hopeless. Plus, we'll talk about GDP as well. Peter, you're the next caller scheduled on that. 9:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC. News read by Lottie Morley.
Official figures show the UK's economy has grown at a slower rate than had been predicted. The Office for National Statistics says it was up by 0.1% between July and September. The White House says leaked emails from Jeffrey Epstein about the US president are a manufactured hoax. The late sex offender appears to say Donald Trump spent hours with a victim. The president denies any wrongdoing in relation to Epstein. And Energy Secretary Ed Miliband has told Nick he's not interested in Sir Keir Starmer's role. It's after the Prime Minister announced he will investigate anonymous attacks, suggesting his colleagues might be plotting a leadership coup. LBC weather, showers in southern Scotland and northern England, a mix of sunshine and cloud elsewhere, highs of 16 degrees.
This is LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero-emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
You plan a holiday, you plan a commute. Meal plans, career plans, even workouts need a plan. So doesn't it stand to reason that your money has one too? Because the sad truth is, if it doesn't, it's just sitting there, barely growing, if at all. That's why you need a money plan. And Quilter can help. It's a lot easier to stick to than a workout plan. Money needs a plan. Quilter. Pensions, investments, advice. Find out more at quilter.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Oh dear, oh dear. Not a lot of love for Shakespeare in the room. Anne, I did Shakespeare at school. I can only really remember Bottom, the Three Witches and Star-Crossed Lovers. The rest is lost in the mists of time. We'll do more Shakespeare in a moment. Excuse me, but we're talking about GDP, not least because, as you've heard on the LBC News Bulletin, it is down to 0.1%. This is the last set of figures prior, of course, to the budget later this month. And if you're just joining the show, as I've said many, many times, journalism has to be about context. 0.1%. Where does that put us with the rest of the world? Well, sadly, behind France, 0.5. So no longer will you hear a government minister be able to say, well, we've got the fastest growth in Europe. No, you haven't. 0.5 in France, where, as one of our contributors pointed out, energy costs are so much cheaper. 0.5 in Japan. The United States, love him or loathe him, and I know many of you it's the latter of the two, that would be 3.8% when annualised. 3.8%. Gang and Busters comes to our mind. But let's talk GDP here in the UK. Peter's in Catford. Peter, what does it mean to you? Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick. Nice to speak to you again. I'm sorry, I'm a bit nervous on the radio. Why? So be kind to me. Please.
Of course. There's nothing to be nervous about. Go ahead.
The thing with GDP, I was trying to understand economics. I'm not an economist. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at GDP just on the government website, and looking at the figures and so on. And if you look at it, it seems that around about 63% is government spending. Now, it's not just the government, it's spending on private companies who work on taxable products. Mm-hmm. So if you look at that in simple terms, four people in the private sector working with themselves, producing things, are actually supporting six people in the public sector.
Is that right? Goodness me.
That's the frightening thing. If you look at all the taxes we pay and you add it up, it's an enormous amount of money. It's not your 20% or 30%. You know, take the tax on fuel, take VAT, take all of the taxes we pay, and if you take one particular person, you actually look at the tax you pay, purchase tax, VAT, and all the rest of it, really remarkable how much tax you're paying. A few years ago, I was on an average salary because the economy was bad, and I accepted a a contract at a very low level, mm-hmm. and it was an average salary, and I worked out that I was actually paying 52% in tax. So this is, I was earning 25K. We're talking about,
yep.
2004 or something, long yep. time ago, and then that was the average. So 52K, theoretically, I'm paying 20% in tax. So GDP obviously affects the markets, and it affects the way governments get funded and so on. So it's an important figure. But what it seems that the government have no idea that what they need to do is actually get growth in the private sector, and publicly funding stuff and increasing GDP might help the markets, but it doesn't help the problem. The problem is we've really got to get more people in the private sector working.
But lastly, to pick up on your point of the taxation, you reckon you were taxed at around 52% of it. You know, all taxes are going to go, many taxes, they're only going to go one way later this month in the budget. You know that?
Yes. Well, I suspect it.
And it's going to make it even tougher out there, Peter.
Yes, I think it's absolutely dire, and the Chancellor is making quite the wrong, the government is making quite the wrong decisions, and the idea that you can't create growth in the private sector is wrong. A lot of the problems are created, I believe, through automation and so on, so the jobs simply aren't there.
Peter, you're absolutely right. I don't know what you thought you'd be nervous about. First class, enjoyed our conversation. Thank you. Let's get some of your emails and texts in on this. Susan Johnson, I'm a recruiter in hospitality. I've placed amazing people from the armed forces. People love them as they're super organised and on top of everything. So that's some good news on the job front. Well done. John in Manchester, just wait until the new employment rights come in. Jobs will disappear even quicker. People will be reluctant to expand in the UK, just like it is in France. Small business is terrified about employing people. And this is from Mark in St Albans. I was born in 1960. I grew up in the nightmare of the Labour governments of the 1970s. For me and those of my era, we are not surprised by the fact this Labour government's modus operandi is tax and spend. It's what they do. It's actually built into the very fabric of their being. They love taking and spending other people's money. Unfortunately, when the money runs out, they're eventually replaced, and it takes at least two terms of the new government before we get things back on track. Let's move out of politics and to Shakespeare. Rob says, I hated Shakespeare when learning it in high school, until I decided I didn't want to be an actor at 19. I ended up in drama school and played Macbeth. I've still got the monologues in my head. They'll never leave. I almost want to ring you up and ask you to do one. But I'm going to speak with Hope in Stevenage about Shakespeare. Did you enjoy studying Shakespeare? Good morning.
Good morning. I love studying Shakespeare. I was quite lucky that I had a mum who embraced us in Shakespeare from kind of age five.
Mm-hmm.
I always joke that I knew Puck's monologue from A Midsummer Night's Dream before I knew how to spell.
Really? No, seriously?
Not anymore. It's been a while since I've memorised it, but right. it was... I actually found Shakespeare boring at school because the way it was taught was terrible. I think actually teachers...
When you say it was terrible, sorry to talk over you, when you say it was terrible, in what way was it terrible? Just failing to get you to engage?
Yeah, because Shakespeare, it's a play. You're meant to see it. You're not meant to just read it and then, your teacher go, what does this sentence mean? And it's like, well, you can't understand it because you're not interpreting it the way it's meant to be interpreted.
So it only came alive thanks to mum, is that right?
Yeah. But I also luckily had one teacher who actually was a drama teacher, but did English as well. And her thing was, no, we're going to go see the play. I was quite lucky that because we did comedies instead.
Okay. So what did you see? Which play did you see, Hope?
We saw Taming of the Shrew.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
And honestly, it didn't make sense. This was A-level, actually.
17.
And honestly, it didn't make sense until we saw it. Like, we were reading it and we were like, this is so misogynistic, it's awful, da-da-da-da-da. We went and saw it, all of us were peeing ourselves laughing. Because, it's interpretation and you can't tell that until you see it. I do also think Romeo and Juliet has been done to death. I think, the curriculum needs to change, add more comedies in, I think it's a lot easier to engage with a comedy than it is a tragedy.
I tell you, I think one that kids could engage, Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yeah, I honestly, it's my favourite play to this day.
Is it? Okay, that was a guess. Okay, is it really? Why do you love it so much?
Just because it explores the fallacies of humans. Mm. You know, the fact that simply just not communicating can lead to such ridiculous errors. Mm-hmm. And, you know, right. how love is silly as well. And how, you know, just be life. Life is silly. Life is just a kind of continuation of mistakes that you hope go well. And, you know...
I've got to ask you, what grade did you get at A-level?
I got a C at A-level.
And what
yes.
do you do now, might I ask? Are you in drama in any sense now?
No, I'm not, but I still love going to the theatre as much as I possibly can. And I still love Shakespeare.
What's not to love? Lastly, RSC, Royal Shakespeare Company, trying to redo the way Shakespeare is taught to get children to engage from age 13, 14. Right idea, lastly, Hope?
Yeah, I think absolutely. Shakespeare's important, and, you know, there should be better options. I think, you know, Akala, hip-hop Shakespeare,
mm-hmm.
trying to engage with the youth in the way that they view things. Shakespeare's easy once you get a handle of it. He's not that difficult, but the way it's taught in schools makes it boring and really difficult.
Hope, thanks for reliving your school days. Have a good one. Carol in Boreham Wood. Carol, your view of Shakespeare and the RSC initiative. Good morning.
Right. I enjoy Shakespeare, some of it now,
right.
but not so much when I was younger. I have to say, I don't think it should be introduced until at least A-level. If you are using English literature to get children interested in reading, in enjoying the theatre and so on and so forth, have something to which they can relate. As regards reading, straight reading, Adrian Mole. As regarding straight reading for girls, Sophie Kinsella about the shopaholic.
Why the distinction between, Carol, why the distinction in reading matter between boys and girls? What are you achieving? What are you trying to achieve there?
Because I'm sorry if I sound sexist, but I know that there are certain things that girls enjoy more than boys. I'm not saying that boys wouldn't enjoy
such
reading
as?
about those things, or girls wouldn't enjoy reading
as?
About the others. So I gave you the examples. Adrian Mole.
No.
Girls
sorry.
Will understand.
What is it that girls like reading about in Adrian Mole that maybe you don't think boys would relate to as much? That's what I was trying to get at.
No, Adrian Mole, I'm saying the boys would
I'm so
relate
sorry,
to
I'm
his
so
problems.
I'm so sorry, Sophie Kinsella.
Boys would
would
relate to his problems. Girls would understand why he's got them.
Right.
Equally, do boys... I can only base it on my own husband, who hates shopping with me.
Right.
But even he
enjoys...
As long
as he loves you, as long as he hates your shopping and loves you, we should be all right on that measure, shouldn't we? So, wouldn't want it the other way round. Hated you and loved shopping.
Okay, we're about to celebrate 52 years of marriage after getting engaged after only 6 weeks. They said it wouldn't last, but obviously shopping hasn't been a big problem. However, he enjoyed the Kinsella books because they're well written. They're relatable to today's society, to these kids. If we are going to connect them, that's what we have to do.
Why can't you say, lastly, you say A-level student, why couldn't a younger child get engaged in Shakespeare briefly, Carol?
As you said to me the other day when we were discussing the new initiatives in education, we don't speak Shakespeare's language anymore.
Thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. Best wishes to your husband. 52 years. Fantastic. Here's to the next 52 or the next big party coming your way. So we're talking a lot about Shakespeare. What made the former leader of the Conservative Party suddenly start quoting Kipling?
It's Tommy this and Tommy that and chuck him out the brute, but it's saviour of his country when the guns begin to shoot. It's Tommy this and Tommy that and anything you please, and Tommy ain't a blooming fool, you bet that Tommy sees.
So why was Ian Duncan Smith telling me that earlier in the show? You'll find out after this. 9:45, LBC News headlines. Lottie Morley.
Official figures show the UK's economy was up by 0.1% between July and September. The White House says leaked emails from Jeffrey Epstein about Donald Trump are a manufactured hoax. And the Energy Secretary Ed Miliband has told Nick he's not interested in becoming Prime Minister. LBC weather, showers in southern Scotland and northern England, a mix of sunshine and cloud elsewhere with highs of 16.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are delays on the North Circular Road, westbound, heading towards the 4th Street Tunnel at Edmonton. It's all down to an accident. It's slow for about half an hour all the way back to South Woodford. Also, queues continue in Deptford. Evelyn Street is closed both ways after an accident. In Neasden, Dudden Hill Lane is closed right near to Dollis Hill Tube Station, which is also closed. It's because of an ongoing investigation. Also on the Underground, there are minor delays on the Central and Jubilee lines, and also minor delays continue on the Piccadilly line. This is up to Heathrow Airport and Uxbridge after a track problem from earlier. And southern trains are disrupted between Uckfield and Crowborough because of some safety checks.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Apart from the obvious reason, why is Trump so opposed to the release of all the Epstein files? And why did he campaign on a promise to release them?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or our new LBC app.
Hey Sainsbury's, got any festive bargains to help me beat the Christmas rush?
Absolutely. We've got savings on the classics this week. Get a litre of Baileys half price at £11 and 7.89 Prosecco for £5.50 with Nectar.
Oh, cheers to that.
Want to get ahead this Christmas and save big? Ask Sainsbury's.
Prosecco offer ends 12th of November, 18 plus nets required. Available in store and online, excluding locals. Delivery fees may apply. Subject to availability. T's and C's apply. Please drink responsibly.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Whether you're managing a business or a football club, your team are your biggest strength. But when it comes to cybersecurity, they could also be your biggest weakness. 88% of cybersecurity breaches are caused by normal human error. So how do you help your team form the ultimate impenetrable line of defense? Just ask BT.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
Let's hear from the Chancellor, Geoffrey.
From the Chancellor, Nigel. Chancellor, John.
Norman.
Kenneth.
Gordon.
Alistair.
George.
Philip.
Sajid.
Rishi.
Nadine.
Kwasi.
Jeremy. And now Rachel. Another year, another budget. Over the past 40 years, we've seen it all. Our experts will continue to filter through the noise and uncertainty, helping you make the most of your tax allowances. Hargreaves Lansdowne, helping Britain invest through it all. Capital at risk. Tax rules applying can change.
You asked, BT answered.
Keeping your team cyber aware is really important in the modern marketplace. Regular training on things like data handling, spotting threats, and securing their devices helps you keep them and your business safe.
Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Search BT Business Cybersecurity to find out more.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
If you've not been listening in the during the 8 o'clock hour yesterday or today, you've not heard the coverage that we've been giving to a pledge that was made by this government for something that was brought in by the previous government, I want to stress, concerning hopeless homelessness and hope for our heroes. I take you to Monday's show. Minister of Veterans and People, Louise Santer-Jones, imploring any veterans experiencing homelessness to call what's known as Op Fortitude.
This is something I really want to get across, Nick, and I wonder if you could help me with this, is okay. Op Fortitude, which is our helpline for any veteran that is facing sleeping on the streets tonight, or if you know a veteran that's sleeping on the streets tonight, call this number and the government will make sure that we find accommodation for them. And the number is, Nick, and this is a challenge for everybody to remember this number, 0800 952 0774. If you're a veteran facing sleeping on the streets tonight, call that number and we will find accommodation for you.
Well, you know what happened next. Of course, we decided to call that number. Jim's a veteran. He served in the Royal Engineers in Afghanistan for 6 years. He's now homeless, living in a caravan in Wales. He contacted Op Fortitude earlier in the week, was on hold for nearly 30 minutes, and then told he would get a call back. Yesterday, he received the call. And here's what happened next.
Just for you, not a family unit or anything like that.
I've got a partner and a dog.
Ah, right. We can't support your partner. You can only support yourself. Support you. Your dog can come along to some support accommodation, but
I'm sorry, that's the situation.
Okay. So there's no point in selling the farm then?
Well, no, not if it's for you and your partner,
no. Right.
Yes, that's right. That's the phone being put down on the veteran who served in Afghanistan. We can't support you. We can support you. We can support your dog. But we can't support your partner. Jim's reaction?
Frustrating and disheartening, especially when you look at things like how much money they get and the wage bill and paying someone a lot of money to deliver these services that aren't necessarily what they could go towards. Lip service, gatekeeping, waste of money.
So Ian Duncan Smith is both a politician and also a vet himself. He was captain in the Scots Guards. His reaction to us was to recite from Tommy by Rudyard Kipling.
It's Tommy this and Tommy that and chuck him out the brute, but it's saviour of his country when the guns begin to shoot. It's Tommy this and Tommy that and anything you please, and Tommy ain't a blooming fool, you bet that Tommy sees.
And that's pointing out the fact that this has gone on for decades. Now, we can't put right what's gone wrong over the decades, but we can at least look at what this government is promising to do. I note again, this was started under the Conservatives, and we will have a look at that, I assure you. But let's bring in Steve in Hull. What can you tell me about Op Fortitude, Steve? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. How are you doing?
I'm very angry about this, actually. How are you, sir?
Yeah, I think a lot of the veterans community will be. And again, the Op Fortitude scheme as a whole, I think a lot of it comes down to like your local authorities as well. When the Op Fortitude, when you're in the helpline, you're not guaranteed to stay. Where 9 times out of 10, a lot of veterans go back to is their hometown when they leave the services or struggle on high times because the support networks around there. So we've supported veterans in the past where we've called that helpline, and this guy was from North East Lincolnshire. He ended up going to Bury near Manchester because that's the only place they could find him. But then all his support networks gone from around him. But we've tried helping veterans in the past, and they just keep saying, They're not a priority. And obviously, with some of the stuff that we do within our careers, we feel that we should be a bit of a higher priority, if such.
Here's what I don't understand, and you don't have the answer to this question, and I take on board everything you said. And yet, if someone arrives this afternoon on a dinghy into Dover, they would be in a hotel room probably within 24 hours.
I know, and that's I think what we're seeing now on TV, that is causing a massive division. Again, what we're drummed into us about values and standards of what we've got to abide by when we're serving in the military. And one of them is, moral courage and basically morally what's right and wrong. And in our country, that is morally wrong not to support our own servicemen and women. But we understand that these people are fleeing persecution and really bad situations, but some of them aren't as well. But like you say, our military servicemen and women who are prepared to give up their lives in service of their country, they can't even get a roof over their head. They're given a tent. And when we serve in the military, they're happy to put us in tents when we go on operational tours for 6 to 8 months at a time, but no one uses that as a comeback to the ministers or the government to say, well, hang about, we can't put an asylum seeker or an immigrant in a hut, in a tent or in that sort of accommodation, but we're more than happy to put our troops and operations in there.
How long did you serve?
I did 27 years in the military, with a bit of a caveat. 17 of that was in green kit on operations, and 9 of that was in rehab and recovery after sustaining life-changing injuries in Afghanistan.
Oh, I see. Okay. Young man, would you do it again, Steve?
100%. Nick, I'd go back and do it again tomorrow. Absolutely. And again, from my injuries, that's another fight that the forces community is fighting. When you're injured in service and the Armed Forces Compensation Scheme, and I hate that word compensation because when you actually apply for it, you feel like you've done something wrong or you're robbing somebody. That money is because you're injured that badly that potentially you not maybe all got to work. Now, I've just finished a 12-year tribunal from when I was injured in Afghanistan in 2012. It finished about 3 weeks ago, and that was for a traumatic brain injury. And the assessors and the Armed Forces Compensation Scheme, which is Vets UK, speak on behalf, and it's all over the paperwork. The Secretary of State for Defence agrees with what we're telling you. And when I was shot in the head, Shot in the helmet. I wasn't actually shot directly in the head, but that was one of the terms they used. Because the bullet didn't actually break the skin, it was your helmet. We don't agree that you sustained a traumatic brain injury from being shot in the head. It was shot in the helmet. It's ridiculous.
But you were able to show doctors' reports that you have serious brain injuries as a result of being shot in the helmet, right?
Exactly that. All my medical evidence from the day I was injured to the end of the tribunal never changed. But the assessors, when they read it, they make... And we think this in the veterans community where there's... I'm going off thingy here. Even on social media, there is a veterans group called The Last Fight, and it's about the pension scheme and the Armed Forces Compensation Scheme and the war pension scheme, about what's given to servicemen and women. And again, it is a massive fight to get that, Nick.
But you do it again?
100%. Again, that's what I think Tony Paul said earlier.
You've been treated so badly, but you tell me, is it the camaraderie that would make you do it again? Because it's clearly not the way you've been treated.
Exactly that. It's the camaraderie, it's the friends you build, it's about when we go on these when we go on operations and stuff like that. It's the job, and it's a job that we love 9 times out of 10. But it's about, and again, it sounds cliche, but the man and lady left and right here. It's about your friends. It's about what the experiences you share together. You create a bond which you'll have them for life, and that's why when the veterans community get back together, we thrive. We do a lot of good things, and when we're left on our own, like these homeless veterans are, that's when we can start going. That's when things can start imploding very, very quickly. But again, a lot more needs to be done. But a lot more needs to be done where ministers, politicians, people at the top need to come and listen to veterans at grassroots level and listen to the struggles, because that's not what they're doing.
Thank you for your service. Thank you for your call and the work you do for fellow veterans. Quite incredible to speak with someone who was shot in the helmet and sustained brain injuries. I've got about a minute to go. Andrew, you're in Crowborough. I need to keep it fairly tight. Crowborough, of course, you could have some people being visited upon you. Your suggestion there. Morning to you, Andrew.
Yeah, morning, Nick. Couple of quick points. First of all, whatever you do, don't retire. We'd miss you. We'd miss you massively in the morning.
Bless you.
A couple of things. I like phrases. Actions speak louder than words. Mm-hmm. Charity begins at home. What I suggest is that somebody like Johnny Mercer picks up half a dozen homeless people, homeless ex-servicemen, puts them and takes them down to the Crowborough camp and requests that they get accommodation.
Because they are coming down to Crowborough anyway. You got it exactly in on your time, and I'm grateful. Thank you. Now, don't miss tomorrow morning show when I'll be joined by the man, well, everyone's talking about.
I think this is daft, to be honest. In fact, I think someone in Downing Street has been watching too much Celebrity Traitors, and this is just about the most appalling attack on a faithful I've seen since Joe Marler was banished in the final.
We're streeting here, taking your calls tomorrow. That's it for today. James O'Brien's the other side of the news on LBC. I'm with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. When you eliminate the impossible, whatever you are left with, however improbable, must be the truth. Sometimes, I suppose, the laws of libel and perhaps even defamation prevent you from following that instruction of Sherlock Holmes's, I think, right through to its most obvious conclusion. But having campaigned on a promise to release Epstein's client list, Donald Trump remains apparently desperate to keep the full dossier of documents from Epstein's estate secret. Trump derangement syndrome is a phrase you may have heard, currently deployed to describe people who really want to know about the depths of the most powerful man in the world's association with a notorious paedophile. What's going on here?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the UK economy grew very slightly in the third quarter, but not by as much as experts thought. New GDP figures out this morning show a 0.1% increase between July and September. Shadow Chancellor Sir Mel Stride has told LBC it's leading to widespread uncertainty.
Well, it's below expectations, and the expectations were not that great. So we've seen a slowdown in growth over the last quarter. And in fact, in September, the economy actually contracted. And I'm afraid that's because of the choices that this government has taken. It's whacked taxes on businesses and, of course, borrowed and spent vast amounts of money, which has stoked inflation and kept interest rates higher than they would otherwise have been. And we're now going into this budget with great uncertainty.
Senior Republicans are calling for the full release of documents relating to sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Thousands of files were published yesterday showing claims Donald Trump once spent hours with a victim. The US president denies any wrongdoing in relation to Epstein. Ed Miliband has told LBC he has no interest in taking Sir Keir Starmer's job. The Energy Secretary says he fully supports the Prime Minister and encouraged his colleagues to do the same. There were anonymous accusations suggesting members of the Cabinet might be planning a leadership challenge. New figures show cases of online grooming across England and Wales have reached a record high. The number has almost doubled in the past 7 years. LBC's Fraser Knight has the details.
Very young children affected by this. The internet being described as an open door into their bedroom. The figures being described this morning as deeply alarming by the NSPCC Children's Charity. And it says figures that they've gathered from police show there were 7,263 cases of online child grooming recorded last year.
And a list of musicians have written a statement urging the government to cap ticket resale prices. Radiohead and Coldplay, and along with other artists, say ministers must tackle ticket touts who are preventing genuine fans from accessing music events. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 26 points at 98.85. The pound buys $1.31 and Euro 13. LBC weather, showers in southern Scotland and northern England, a mix of sunshine and cloud elsewhere, with highs of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
In 2024, a hangry fan posted, "Why do other countries have better McDonald's menus than ours?" So, we went abroad and heisted some worldwide favourites. The World Menu Heist. 8 of the most wanted McDonald's menu items from around the world. Now in the UK. Until 25th of November from 11 a.m, fees apply to delivery orders. Price of participation may vary, subject to availability.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after 10, and it's another one of those days, isn't it, where you are probably trying to put together a jigsaw that somebody has tidied up and accidentally put pieces from 3 or 4 different jigsaws all in the same box. That is, good Lord, where did that come from? That is the first time I've ever actually pinned down what it's like to try to keep track of Donald Trump's presidency, or even perhaps Donald Trump's life. It's as if sort of someone has accidentally jumbled up 4 different jigsaws in the same box, and you're trying to do that jigsaw. Every now and then you find a corner. And then you find 7 more, which is really confusing. Or you find 2 bits that clearly do go together, maybe even 4 bits. But then nothing... so you've got... oh, Lord, where does this go? There's no sky... Hey! So that's what it's like some mornings. Some days, of course, we can call upon Simon Marks to have a look down the back of the sofa and find pieces that we'd missed or that we didn't know we needed or that we didn't even realise existed. But, of course, when he brings them to the table, all he does sometimes is create even more confusion and mystery about what precisely we're trying to pin down. What is the actual picture that we are trying to put together? And I don't know that there ever will be one. I really don't. I think it's like trying to nail jelly to the wall, or indeed herd cats. And that perhaps is the point, is that you put so much obfuscation, litigation, intimidation, you put so much in the space that the idea of there being a simple thread of comprehension becomes absolutely ridiculous, absolutely impossible. And the temptation then, for those of us who are charged with trying to keep track of some of this stuff, the temptation then is to just give up, to throw your hands up in the air and go, oh, forget about it. That is, I think, what the plan is when somebody like Steve Bannon, the convicted criminal who remains a confidant of Donald Trump and has been pardoned by Donald Trump for some, if not all, of his crimes. Again, it's impossible to keep track. There's another bit of a different jigsaw. When he talks about flooding the zone with bleep, That's what they're doing. If you flood the zone with bleep, you can tell we haven't got BBC budgets, can't you? That I have to do that myself. I just gave the game away. But if you are flooding the zone with bleep, then you are making it almost impossible for people who want to actually keep track of things, or who want to try to keep track of things. And then you've got the other thing that is clearly going on, and this has become clear this week in a heap of ways. The only thing I didn't really credit was how complicit UK media individuals and institutions would be in Donald Trump's determination to create a media ecosystem in the White House where nobody will ask him questions about Jeffrey Epstein. Just pause and think about that, just for a moment, because I think it's really important. Again, it's really easy to be distracted by pieces from a different jigsaw. But why on earth is Donald Trump bigging up the half-wits at GBBS, of all things? Answer, because he wants, even with foreign journalists, as Simon Marks again warned us months ago, he wants the press corps at the White House, he wants the journalists who have access to the president to be people and institutions who are too frightened, too bent, or too supine to actually ask him questions he doesn't want to be asked. I joked with you, probably in February or March of this year, that we would end up with a press corps that essentially says on every day a variation on the question that they'll take it in turns to ask of how, on a scale of 1 to 10, how wonderful are you, Mr. President? And that was a joke in February or March of this year. I don't think it's very funny now. I don't even think it's necessarily a joke now. That is the direction of traffic that we have seen the United States media forced to go in. And this week we've seen the UK media as well co-opted into that with the connivance, oddly, of the Daily Telegraph and various other sort of right-wing lobbyists who somehow ended up with jobs advising the BBC on independence. So that is partly why the story that broke overnight does not feel as guaranteed to bring down a president as it would in almost any other circumstances. It is yet another mark of how far we have fallen and how mad things have become. The simple notion that the old rules no longer apply. And this hasn't happened by accident, has it? This isn't something that we've suddenly woken up and gone, oh, whoops-a-daisy. We seem to have abandoned all semblance of transparency, integrity, ethics, and evidence, and ended up in a place where the man who invented fake news can be pursuing a vendetta against, for example, the BBC. But that's not what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about this curious combination of conditions whereby Donald Trump can campaign on a promise to release the Epstein files. And then, having become president, can be diametrically and violently opposed to the release of the Epstein files. And it doesn't actually make sense at first glance, does it? Because if he had anything to hide, why would, again, are we doing that thing? Are we making a different jigsaw? Applying logic? Thinking just because he did something on Monday means that that necessarily entails that he would have to do something on Wednesday? What would it be? I don't know, but here we are. When he was campaigning, even